Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Ken Hudson Show. Ken has investigated the strange and unusual for over two decades. He's led ghost tours, and he's accessed the most haunted places in the Southwest. He's the author of some 40 books of the paranormal, unusual, hidden treasure, conspiracies, and the downright strange. His personal experiences and the experiences of many others are related on this show and in his many books. Please sit back, relax, and enjoy as Ken takes us into tales of terror, trauma, and triumph. And now, your host, Mr. Ken.
And good evening. You're listening to Ken Hudnall.
Good evening. You're listening to Ken Hudnall.
What's happened here?
There
we go. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show right here on the one and only Blog Talk Radio. Coming to you live from our studios in El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. We are back from our travels, back in the studio where almost everything works as it's supposed to. We certainly had an interesting time and met a lot of very interesting people. And while this first guest I'm going to talk with is not from the genre that we are used to dealing with, he certainly is an individual who has had an unusual career, I guess you could say. His name is Monty Melnick, and for 22 years, he was the tour manager for a group called the Ramones. Now, I grew up hearing about them and all their escapades and things that they got involved with. But unlike Monty, I wasn't right there in the middle of them. And I know that I've got a lot of listeners who are from my same generation, I guess you could say. And there have been a number of requests for me to get different guests on in all kinds of genres. And tonight, for the first hour, we're going to listen to the fun and excitement of being what amounted to the fifth Ramon. Now, the second hour, we will have Yoli, who will be doing some readings for us. And the third hour, we will have Liette Silberman, who I had to reschedule from that disaster on Thursday when the Wi-Fi kept going up and down. And she is an expert in tarot cards. So tonight is going to be an interesting show, and if you've got questions, by all means, call. Ask them. Don't sit and wonder. The numbers to call are 915-219-4210 if you're in the El Paso area. Toll free from any place in the continental United States, 866-229-2155, or in the Northeast, 347-857-2680. The word, of course, you can go to the, you can send a text. You can go to Blog Talk and you can sign in and carry on with some of the people in the chat room. Any number of ways you can get in contact with me. You can also send me an email, Ken from at kenhudnall.com. Well, we are, as I say, back in studio, and we are, after that little jaunt, I plan on being in studio for a while. I'm no spring chicken anymore. And when you drive that type of distance, it certainly certainly makes an impact. Now, my guest as I said, is Monty Melnick. Very interesting person to sit and talk with. I met him at the Book Expo in New York City. I was going to an interview from the floor, and once again, the world-famous Wi-Fi of New York went kaput. But we've got him in studio. Now, we will bring him on. You with me?
Hello.
Hello.
How are you? It's good to be with you.
Well, it's good to have you. We can have an uninterrupted conversation.
Okay, I'm ready.
Now, I seem to have, curious as to who that is. Somebody just came into the switchboard. That would be something, I guess, Heidi needs to check out for me. Now, I'm going to bring up the chat room. Maybe?
What are you having, strange paranormal experiences there?
Oh, yes. Whenever you deal with computers, sometimes the spirit really gets excited. Now, for those of my listeners who are from the younger generation, why don't you explain exactly who the Ramones were?
Well, they were a group out of New York City, the forerunners of the punk movement, out of CBGB's, a club down there, along with groups like Television, Talking Heads, Blondie, groups like that. Well, it came out of that area and that genre and that period of time, early 70s, early to mid-70s.
Well, now, what do you think made that era produce so many bands who actually changed the music industry?
Well, at the time, the music business was kind of going more towards like stadium rock groups with long instrumental solos and long songs and just too much instrumental. And the CBGBs came along and gave kids a chance to put together bands and just play their own music and showcase it, and they kind of developed a whole new set of music there, you know?
Something new that everybody responded to.
Yeah, it was short, you know, original songs, quick, fast music, easy to play, you know, you don't have to be like a solo on your guitar to come into the group, you know, so a lot of kids picked up on it, and it generated a lot of groups all across the country and the world.
Well, now, from the reading that I did in your book, which is On the Road with the Ramones, which is an excellent read.
Thank you.
And you've got pictures going back for almost before you started with the Ramones.
Yeah, the good thing about my book is they let me put in lots of images and pictures, like over 250. So actually, you don't even have to know how to read to enjoy my book. Just look at the pictures.
There's a lot of folks I know that would go for that. What I know one of the comments made was you don't really have to know how to play a musical instrument to be in a band.
Yeah, it gave a lot of kids a chance to just kind of pick up an instrument and just try what they could and form a band and just write songs the way they can without being like a virtuoso instrumentalist.
Well, that was, I've never quite heard it put that way before. I was in a few bands growing up, and generally we pretty much, everybody could play when we started out.
Well, this gave everybody a chance to get in groups and kind of bang it out there. Like, I mean, the Ramones really started pretty raw, and they kind of developed over the years.
As from what I was reading, one or two of them had no real clue how to play their instruments before they got started.
Exactly. They just picked up and just started banging away and kind of clicked, you know.
Unbelievable. Now, okay, On the Road with the Ramones. What kind of experience was that?
Oh, my God. You know, 22 years of touring is quite a lot, you know. Played a lot of shows and on the front of my book, there's a little sign, and it says 2,263 miles to go. That's kind of like a little secret type of thing I put on the front of it. Do you know what that means?
Off the top of my head, no, unless it's from New York to almost any other place in the country.
Well, actually, it's not nothing to do with mileage. It's actually 2,263 shows they played. And I actually list all the shows in the back of the book. So you're talking about a lot of shows.
Definitely. What made him click? What made him go as far as...
I kind of retired in 96. You know, Joey kind of he had a lot of problems health-wise, and he needed to rest for a while. Like, they would have gone on more if Joey was feeling a little bit better.
Then
Johnny figured they might as well stop while he's on top instead of just running it down, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Some groups go on too long.
Well, the Ramones still have following today. In fact, I think it's probably bigger than it was when they quit.
Amazingly enough, yeah. So they retired in 1996, and then unfortunately Joey died in 2001, and then they got into the Hall of Fame, and then Dee Dee died, and Johnny died. And all of a sudden, they became so huge, really big. They're bigger now than they ever were, actually. And because a lot of the kids that were listening to them over the years became into positions where they got to put them into positions where they can put them into movie soundtracks and TV commercials where they never could get when they were around. And so they're really big now. They're bigger than they were ever. My line now is, if the Ramones were this big when I was working for them, I would have gotten a big raise. That's a good joke I like to tell a long time.
Definitely an interesting way to look at it. I mean, Elvis, when he died, had $1 million in a checking account and a few hundred in savings, and now he makes, $30-40 million a year.
Exactly.
The man's dead.
Yep, more money than ever. That's the Ramones that way too. Their records are selling. They're getting TV commercials. They're movie soundtracks. Stuff they couldn't get when they were around. And they're getting played on the radio more. They hardly got a lot of U.S. radio play when they were around. They get a lot of radio play now. So it's like, bigger when you're dead, not around.
Yeah, I know. There's been a few that tried to fake it to get that little jump. All right, how did a group like the Ramones come together?
Well, they were all friends. They lived in Forest Hills, and they all knew each other. And they were into bands, and they decided to get together in a group. And they got, started playing together in basements and stuff like that, and took off.
Well, now, how did you get involved with them?
Tommy Ramone, the original drummer, Tommy and I were very good friends. Actually, I was in some groups with Tommy well before the Ramones. Tommy was actually a guitar player, and I played in several. I was a bass player at the time, and I played in several groups with Tommy. And then Tommy kind of branched off into, like, recording engineering, and he, of course, was very good friends with the Johnny, Joey, and Dee Dee, and the group started. There was originally just a three-piece, but Joey was on the drums and Johnny guitar and Dee Dee was in bass and singing most of the vocals. And they came to Tommy and said, "Well, let's see what we can do." He said, "Okay, like I'll produce you guys and manage you." And Tommy and I had gotten together. We had built a recording rehearsal studio on 20th Street, and we built it and managed it, and we got free time for our own projects. I had my own projects of different bands I was playing with, and Tommy at the time was just producing the Ramones. So he heard Joey had a good voice, and Dee Dee wasn't really cutting, singing lead and playing bass. So he pulled Joey off the drums and stuck him in between Johnny and Dee Dee, and they started looking for drummers. And so Tommy would sit down and say, well, he was a good musician. He could play any type of instrument. So he would, sit down and say, play something like this to the drummers. And no drummers really could really get the style, and Tommy kind of developed the whole Ramones style. So they said, why don't you join the group? And he said, all right. He joined the group, became a drummer. He's actually not a drummer. He's a guitar player. But he developed this unique style of the Ramones, and it took off. And I was doing at the studio there, working with them, doing showcases, running the sound. And they started getting jobs outside, and they said, why don't you come do the sound and help us different jobs around the city there, and I did that. And the studio hadn't happened to close at the time, and they started getting jobs all over the place and all over the world, as a matter of fact. And I said, well, this is an interesting little path, a fork in the road, and I kind of took it and worked my way up, starting doing everything for the Ramones, like roadieing and doing the sound. And eventually, the bigger they got, the more people I could hire. And I, you know, hired sound men, roadies, and eventually worked my way up to tour manager.
Well, how much of their success was just pure old-fashioned, unadulterated luck, being at the right place at the right time?
Well, that always helps. You know, luck always helps. They were, you know, they happened to be where, in the city, when CBGBs and a lot of clubs like Max's and places like that were giving bands a chance to play their own music instead of just, you know, playing the top 40, what most of the clubs were doing. You know, you just had to come and play top 40 in a band. But clubs like CBGBs and Max's and other places, Coventry and Queens, they let groups come in and play their own original material, which kind of spurred on a whole movement there. That helped a lot. So I guess being around at that time with a new group helped. So it is a little bit of luck and a timing. Of course, yeah. they had the goods too. You know, they had the thing. They had the material and the style that was unique and it hit the spot there.
Well, now of course, it looked almost like they were one of the pioneers in what I've always referred to as the grunge look, you know, the T-shirts and the torn jeans and all that.
Well, hey, grunge came along after. The grunge was influenced by punk. Punk started before, then grunge took off after that. And there were all these groups like Nirvana and Green Day and groups like that, Pearl Jam, they're all big fans of the Ramones. They kind of grew up listening to the Ramones, and they were inspired by the Ramones. So it's, you could say grunge is like kind of the offspring of punk.
Hmm. Well, now, how would they do today if they were just starting out?
Starting, I think they would be more accepted today than they were back then, because there's groups like, you know, Nirvana and Green Day and Offspring and all those groups that have been out there are very popular. So I think they do very well today.
Yeah, it was interesting. After I talked with you, I was back at the hotel getting set up, and I was discussing the interview with someone else, and I was overheard by some tourists from Germany. And I'm not really sure what they thought I was doing, but they were so excited I was going to have the Ramones on the show. And
well,
I kept trying to explain that probably wasn't going to happen, and they just weren't grasping it, but these folks were tremendous fans.
Well, the Ramones developed a huge fan base all international, worldwide. That's why I stuck with them for so long. It's such an interesting job, just going to all different countries of the world. Now, talk about Germany. Funny thing about that, actually in October, my book's coming out in a German edition, and all the places in the world that has a Ramones Museum happens to be Berlin. There's one Ramones Museum in the world, and it happens to be Berlin. The German fans are so fanatic, they actually opened up a Ramones Museum in Berlin. It's amazing. So I'm going there in October to kick off my German edition of On the Road with the Ramones. In German, it's called Auf Tour mit den Ramones. Actually means on tour with the Ramones. They couldn't translate on the road. It didn't sound good in German.
Some of the photographs of you guys back when you got started, I don't think any of you weighed over 98 pounds.
Yeah, they kept the weight down. Yeah, we travel a lot, so you know, you lose a lot of weight traveling around.
I can imagine. Now, I understand it was Dee Dee that was really into the drug scene.
Yes, yes, yes. He was, unfortunately. That's how he died, the rock and roll life. He OD'd.
But I'm sure you all took part in the partying at one time or another.
Hey, it's rock and roll. What is it? Sex, drugs, and rock and roll?
That's right.
Sure, you're on the road, you know, you got to watch yourself, though. I mean, they wouldn't have lasted like 22 years if they were, well, I mean, you know, there was different people. Didi didn't last that long. You know, he lasted, you know, a certain amount, then he left. But actually, he died late, you know, he might have lasted. He kind of kept it together. We kind of kept him under control, sort of, when he was in the group. But, you know, you can't really party too hard if you want to stay around for that long. You know, that Johnny and Joey knew that, so that's why Johnny kept a pretty tight ship. And, you know, if we were partying like after every show, I don't think we would have lasted too long. We had to share partying, but you had to keep it down.
Well, the, you know, frankly, having grown up listening to all the different, bands that, came from England or came from Europe and those that were started here, Ramones accomplished a sound that not even the Beatles did.
Well, the Beatles are just something else. I mean, the Ramones, as I said, it was raw feelings and raw, as Iggy's album, the raw power. It's just getting down to the basics, like short songs, 3 minutes, the most. They kept it to the basics. That's where they kind of hit a key.
Mm-hmm.
Stripped down. Because, as I said, when they started, there was groups like, Rush and Pink Floyd and, all these with their long solos and huge, long songs and like albums, one song on a whole side of an album. It was just like too much at the time. That's what the Ramones felt. So they just wanted to cut it down right to the bone and just get down to the basics, get back to the basic rock and roll, which is rock and roll is pretty simple, really, when it first started, you know?
Yeah, in fact, some of it was, the part of the country I was in, which produced Elvis and a few others, part of rock and roll came right out of the church gospels.
Buddy Holly.
Yeah.
All those people down there. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I mean, I got into the music scene, but I got out of it rather quickly.
What'd you play?
Drums.
All right. Oh, drummer. Okay. Funny thing about, you've seen Spinal Tap, the movie Spinal Tap?
Yeah, I did.
So in the movie Spinal Tap, if you remember, all the drummers are blowing up all the time. The drummers, they just couldn't hold on to a drummer.
Yeah.
And the Ramones, all the drummers are still alive. There's three drummers and a bass player that are still alive from the group over the years. It wouldn't make too good a group, except maybe a drum circle or something. But
hey, you never can tell.
Three drummers and a bass player. That would be an interesting group.
Well, the from the group that I was involved with, they're all either dead or retired.
Mm-hmm.
And once they retired, for most of them, that was it. Nobody ever wanted to go back and do anything.
Well, it's hard to get back into that unless you're, younger man. It is, that's why I'm not on the road, anymore. I've had my about 30 years on the road, and that kind of wore me down.
Hey, with your experience, you ought to be back on the road tomorrow.
Yeah, but as I said, it's a grinding tour. It's grinding out there on the road. It's more of a young man's game now. I've had my 30 years out there. Now I need my easy life.
Now, I'm sure most people who are familiar with the group realize that the names they used professionally weren't their birth names.
When they first started, go ahead.
Not said, for example, there was no Joey Ramone. It was just a name that he went by.
Yeah, I mean, everybody thought they were brothers.
Exactly.
And actually, when we went to like Latin American Spanish countries, they had those Los Ramones. They thought they were a Spanish group or something. But no, they decided just to take the last name Ramone, and actually they changed their. Joey's wasn't Joey. The name is Jeffrey. Jeffrey Hyman is his name, and so they all decided to, take a name, one name. Actually, where it came from was Paul McCartney's check into hotels under Paul Ramone, Dee Dee saw that one day and said, hey, well, let's call ourselves the Ramones. So actually the Beatles, getting back to the Beatles, had something to do with the Ramones. Talk about 6 degrees of separation. How do you like that?
Yeah, definitely.
But for years they thought they were brothers, you know.
And, they had such varied backgrounds. I mean, Johnny actually went to military school, I read in your book.
Yes, he did. That's why he was kind of like the general. He kept things in line.
Well, now
his website, he has a website by his wife. It's called Johnny Ramone Army, his website. So it's militaristic to the end.
Yeah, well, you know, some things never get out of your blood.
Yeah.
Well, now, what, I always ask an author, what influenced you to write the book that you wrote?
What inspired me to do it, you mean?
Yes.
Well, you know, for years after they retired in 96, people coming to me said, you know, you got a unique story. I really didn't feel I wanted to write a book or do anything because, you know, there's a lot of things in there I didn't want to, you know, that were uncomfortable. I was friends with, like, Joey and the rest of them, and there's things I really, to make the book, you know, realistic, I had to tell certain things that I was uncomfortable. But, you know, Joey passed away, and I felt a little better and that I could kind of reveal things that I wouldn't have when he was around. So for me, it was more a cathartic experience, you know, like kind of getting things. After all those years working with them and then retired, they retired, and it was nice to kind of get things out.
Mm-hmm.
Just get things down on paper and just say things and get things out the way I felt it should be. It was a very good experience. And also, my book is also an oral history, too. I interviewed a lot of people and band members and people that work with the Ramones and wives and girlfriends and all that. So a lot of that is there. You know, me talking to them, and they're getting out a lot of things on their mind, too. So it's a little bit of oral history and a little bit of my writing, and I had a co-writer, Frank Meyer, who was great. He's also a good rock and roll guy and a rock journalist. We put together the book together.
Well, now, it's interesting that some of this material you talked about in your book, I've never seen in anything else I've read.
What was that?
I said some of the material you put in your book, I haven't seen in any other things that I've read about the group.
Well, yeah, the unique thing about my group, my book is I was there from the beginning to end. Now, no other Ramones book can say that. They were written by third-party journalists, you know, as a journalist. I was there from the beginning, well before the beginning, to the end and well after the end. So my experience, actually, even the Ramones that are left, Marky wasn't in the group all the way through, CJ and Richie and Clem Burke, they were just in and out of the group. And Tommy, he's the only original one left. There was four originals of, you know, Johnny, Joey, and Dee Dee are dead, and Tommy's the only original Ramone. He wasn't there all the way through either. He left a few years into the group, so... Mom, that was the only one, you know, that's the unique thing about my book. I was there. The only other person that was there that long was Arturo Vegas, the lighting director, a good friend of mine.
Mm-hmm.
And he was there from the beginning to end, and he hadn't decided to write a book as of yet. So that's why my book is so unique. It'll never be anybody around. I mean, Johnny and Joey were the only people that were there from the beginning to end, and they're not around, and they haven't written a book, so that's why mine's a unique type of perspective.
Well, it definitely is unique. And for those who were fans of early rock and roll, I can't stress strongly enough that this is a book you ought to read. It gives you the other side of the coin, so to speak.
Also, I wrote it too because there's lots of people working for bands that people really don't realize. When a band steps on stage, there's a lot of people behind the band, you know, tour managers, sound men, roadies. I kind of want to get a little bit of that out to the public, what that's like, the people behind the band, what it's like to support a band, to get the band on stage. You know, like with any house, needs a good foundation, and with a band, the good foundation is the people working for them, and people really don't realize all these people that are working underneath the band that are helping them on stage. If there was a lousy sound, man, the band would sound bad. If the light guy was bad, the band would look bad. If the guy didn't tune the guitar well, the band would sound bad. So there's lots of things happening in a group, not just them up on stage, that I want to kind of get out in my book.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, I read, and you confirmed a great deal of it in your book, that toward the latter part of their career, they were close to not being no longer friends, but close to actually having a serious dislike of each other.
Well, you know, the funny thing about it is they were all, it's like a marriage. I mean, a number of years you're together with some people, and then things happen, and of course, in a band, in a group, there's girlfriends and wives and people else, other people running around that kind of, you know, get in the way of the, you know, relationships or things happen. And one of them was, you know, Johnny and Joey had a girlfriend that was around, and Joey's girlfriend, and she went over to Johnny, and I actually eventually married Johnny, but, you know, it didn't help the relationship. However, I mean, they realized that the music was something unique and really something that was worth keeping together. So the best way to keep was not to, like, kill each other, punch each other and fight and then break up the group. Stay together, don't talk to each other for a while, you know? I mean, that's the best way. And it worked. For a number of years, they just, you know, kind of have minimal contact. And but when they went on stage, it was the Ramones. That's how they related, that was their best communication. And they realized that. And they realized that they had something that fans, they were relating to the fans, and they didn't want to give that up. It was a great thing.
Well, that's interesting, being able to perform with somebody you really didn't particularly care about.
Well, as I said, they went beyond that. The music, as I said, they were friends before. They were good friends before. They started the band as friends a number of years. Only the latter years, you know, a number of years that they fell out. But they realized they still had the music. And, you know, I'm sure you know what it's like when you walk on stage and you're playing something and that feeling between you and the audience, it's like a high. That's actually why a lot of musicians turn to drugs, because when they walk off stage, they want to get that same. I had that, you know, I know that experience because I was a musician myself and I played on stage and I had that incredible feeling, what it was like when you play and you're relating to the band and the audience is feeding back to you. You can feel that vibe, it's a high, actual high. So a lot of bands, when they step off the stage, they want to keep that high going, so they turn to drugs, you know? So they had the same, they knew that. They were communicating. They were playing the world. I mean, you know, it was going good. It wasn't going bad. You know, they still, you know what I mean? It was, if they were just not playing, you know, playing dumpy clubs, then maybe they would have broken up a long time ago, but they would have had world tours, you know, Japan, Australia. They went to the movie Rock and Roll High School. You know, things are happening in between to keep their minds off of really what they didn't care for each other. So that they can put aside. You can work with somebody and not like them. You know what I mean? Show a lot of people in businesses, you know, do that. You know, so they realized what their music was bigger than fighting and breaking up. And they were making money. You know, so, I mean, you know.
That's it.
They made, they were still making, you know, it was a job, so.
Yeah. Well, now, what was I know they had been together a long time, over 20 years, and that's a long time no matter what you're doing. But what was would you say was was there one incident that had them saying, well, it's time we retired?
Well, Joey kind of, I mean, Joey had different things wrong with him, unfortunately. He wasn't the greatest in health. Throughout the years, he fought with different types of things, different problems. He wasn't the healthiest type of person, so he was kind of run down there at the end. And he decided this, like, I want to take a long time off. And Johnny, they had like offers to go to South America and play huge shows and things. And Joey just got he wanted to take some time off. And Johnny figured, well, I mean, the group's big, you know, has some. Why not quit while we're ahead? So he decided, well, in 96, that'll be it. We'll retire. And Joey was happy with that. He needed some time off. I'm sure maybe if Joey was still around, if they're all still around now, they would have gotten back together. You know, look at the Dolls and things like that. People come back.
Yeah.
People come back with enough money thrown at them. It was just Joey's health, you know. And Johnny figured he wanted to quit when he was ahead. He didn't want to kind of run out and be a has-been, you know, like a band that's playing, just hacking away at it. So that's kind of what happened. They retired in 96, and then, unfortunately, they passed the core of the group passed away over the number of years, you know, a couple of years after that, you know.
So yeah, that's a sad thing to have happen.
It is. It's kind of scary. You know, you deal with these and live with these people for years, and all of a sudden, you know, they're dropping off this and that, you know, like, it's kind of scary. Well, like, we all get old, and people pass away, but it happens. But, you know, they were still young. I mean, they're early, you know, late 40s, early 50s, you know, so they still kind of, look at the Stones are still around. How old are they, for God's sakes?
They'll be here. The rest of us are gone.
The what?
They'll be here when the rest of us are gone.
Yes. They got they're taking something else to keep them alive. I don't know. Well, they have pictures in their closets or something.
It's unbelievable. I want to take a break here to mention that this hour is sponsored by Golden Corral, 7420 North Mesa. The food is outstanding. If you're looking for a great place to take the family, that Golden Corral in particular, and Golden Corral in general, because it is a chain found around the country, has the best food you'll put in your mouth, and you can take the whole family there, take them for a nice dinner, not have to hawk the house or sell the car to pay the bill. And if you tell them you heard about it on the Ken Hudno Show, they give you 10% off your bill. Now that's here. We're trying to work that deal out with the rest of the chain. But if you're in the El Paso area, go in and tell them you heard about it on the show, and I'll appreciate it. Now, while we were...
Can you get any of that good Texas barbecue there?
They've had barbecue, yes.
All right. You know, one of the things about traveling around so much when you're on the road that the group really look forward to is the different regional foods, and Texas barbecue was one of them. We always look forward to coming to Texas and getting some of that good Texas barbecue.
Well, now, I've got a listener out of Chile.
Okay.
From Golden Corral, and I said, well, hell, order it to go. He told me he was going to, but I don't know that he has yet.
Chile, yeah, we played there a few times.
No, I'll take that back. It was Peru.
Peru? Well, we didn't play Peru.
Well, Peru's, I understand, an interesting place to go.
Oh, well, South America is interesting. All the different countries down there, fairly.
I spent some time in Panama and Point South in my misspent youth, and it was definitely unique.
Absolutely. One of the biggest places, the biggest place is actually Argentina. They're just like massive there, bigger than anywhere else in the world. The Argentinian fans are like incredible. They really picked up on the group.
To give you an idea of how it is in South America, I went to the premiere showing of Gone with the Wind in 1977. And that was the premiere showing. We had lookalikes and we had, you know, spotlights and the whole nine yards. That was the first time that movie had been shown there.
Wow. Took a while to get down there, huh?
Tell me about it. And it was just amazing how anything American just drove them nuts.
Have you been to Atlanta? You've been to Atlanta?
I grew up in that area.
Yeah, because we played across the street from where that what was the theater that opened up in Atlanta.
Oh, I could have.
It was a big theater. Right across the street, there was a club up the block. We stayed across from where the premiere of Gone with the Wind was. That big, huge theater there. It was still there, that theater. It was great, you know.
Oh, they got some phenomenal things in some of the major cities. We've been to, since I write books about unsolved mysteries, lost treasures, and ghosts, we're always going to places that are thought to be haunted, and some of them are some of the most beautiful old theaters you'd ever want to see.
Oh, yeah, some of them are amazing. Phantom of the Opera's.
Definitely.
A few of them somewhere, right?
Yeah. We went to one theater where It was in a southern town. I know it was the state of Georgia. I don't remember where. And while I was exploring the stage, I kept seeing the curtains in one of the boxes move and figured somebody was sitting up there. When I got ready to go, I made a comment about it to the stage director, and he said, there's nobody up there. That door's been sealed off for years.
Huh.
I said, I got news for you, sport. There's somebody sitting up there. Never
yeah.
The end of that one. Now, I noticed one of the guys that you wrote about in the group was the merchandising director. Now, this was, they retired in 92 as a group.
96, yeah. No, you're talking about Arturo Vega?
Yeah, what type of merchandising was there in the 80s and 90s?
Oh, that they lived off the road from merchandising. That's how they didn't make much money selling records. Merchandising was a big thing. They handled all their own merchandising, all T-shirts and buttons and things like that. So they sell like tons of merchandising. It's a big thing.
Now, I know that's where a lot of Presley's comes from, but I wasn't. Okay, T-shirts, I can see it. When I think merchandising, I think, everything except T-shirts.
No, T-shirts, when you talk about rock and roll, it's T-shirts, buttons, flyers, photos, all sorts of things along those lines. It's quite lucrative if you're on the road. That kept them alive for a long time, just selling their merchandise worldwide,
And you said they didn't make much off the...
Well, their records, they weren't huge selling, They never had a big, huge hit like, Green Day or Nirvana or anything like that, They could have if they had the right radio play here in the States, and they did. They sold better actually overseas, As I said, the biggest place they were was Argentina because the promoter actually owned the radio stations, and so he played the Ramones a lot on the radio, and they became huge down there. If we got that much play here in the States, they would have been as big as Green Day or Nirvana or any of those groups. Pearl Jam, all those groups.
I know Hasselhoff is considered a major superstar in Europe, and he's kind of here.
Who, Hasselhoff?
Yeah.
He's big in Germany. He's big. I think he has a huge following in Germany for some strange reason. But as I said, you can never tell. It's a Ramones Museum in Berlin, so you never know where your fans are, They could be anywhere in the world.
Well, that's true. As I walk through the BEA, a lot of people seem to know about the show and they said they listen to it every night, but they've never texted in. So, unfortunately, there's no way to know unless there's some contact.
Uh-huh.
Well, now, what... the fun and excitement of writing a book is kind of a, it's not something that lasts an inordinate amount of time. So what's next on your agenda?
Well, as I said, the it's in October, I'm going to Germany to do that, getting my edition out in German. And actually last year I went to Spain and I had a Spanish edition. They flew me to Madrid and Barcelona, so I was lucky enough to have my book published in Spanish. So, look for different countries now to conquer Spain, Germany, who knows. I met somebody at the book fair there from Finland was interested in publishing it, so get my book out in Finnish. I'm not really a writer or anything like that. I just kind of put the book out to get things off my, get things out in the open that I had in the back of my mind. And I have a room full of memorabilia, so I was lucky, as I said before, that my publisher let me put in all these images and photos and posters and buttons and images of things like that, which helped a lot in the book, because most books like text, 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 couple pictures in the middle, text, 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 My book's like full of pictures.
You're probably the only one that has some of the pictures I've seen in your book.
Well, a lot of them I took myself, That's my personal stuff,
Well, I tell you, you have definitely, most writers try to find their niche, and yours seems to be ready-made.
I'm really not a writer. I'm more of a kind of like tell my story to somebody like Frank, who kind of put it into words too, you know. And also we interviewed a lot of people. That was the good part, to get, you know, talking to them and talking to people that work with the group and relatives and girlfriends and wives and stuff like that and roadies and all that. That was so the book's kind of like not really more written. It's more oral type of thing that I talk to people and they tell their story too.
Well, now, what's the, when you're, something I've often wondered about, when you have, when you're a member of a band such as the Ramones, while the band is going, you make, you know, if it's a successful band, you do reasonably well. But after you retire, is the life of a retired rock and roll superstar that lucrative?
It is. If you had a lot of hits and songs, yeah. Or the merchandising goes crazy, like the Ramones, and they keep, if they, you know, they became bigger later.
Well, I have to.
Yeah, sure. You can make. I mean, you write a songs and royalties that gets played all the time. You make money. I mean, you know, it's not. It's a hard thing. I mean, not everybody. You know, it's a very small percentage get to that point. But it's sure the big, you know, big groups make lots of money even after retirement. Okay, look at that.
Tell me that the performer really doesn't make much on the music company sales, that the where their money is made is on tour.
No, a big group, you make money off your royalties, and then they, you sell things to like commercials or soundtracks, and then you know, it generates from that. So the music has popular bands, big bands, make lots of money on publishing and royalties and stuff like that, sure. Every time the song plays on the radio, it goes into a little kitty somewhere, and the band get, you know, bigger bands get paid for that. So, I mean, you know, there's lots of money if you're a bigger group.
Mm-hmm.
Probably people think, you know, you just you get into a rock band, you make millions of dollars. It doesn't work that way. Only the big groups make lots of money. And there's still merchandising. You see, you pointed out Elvis. I mean, if you know, the Ramones still sell tons of T-shirts now. Places like CBGB's actually. So he's Hilly, and he owned the place. He was making like $2 million a year on just on T-shirts from CBGB's because people like the T-shirt that much. So, you know, you have a big group, you know, so you make lots of money lots of different ways.
Well, when a band retires... how about the crew? I've never heard a discussion of what happens to the crew that's been with them forever.
The crew looks for another band. That's what the crew does.
The crew goes and writes a book.
Well, if they can, yeah. I mean, you know, it's, as I said, I didn't really go out to look to seeking to write the book. People came to me and said, why don't you do it? And they kind of bugged me, and I said, all right. And I happened to fall into the right people that had the connections to do the book. I was very lucky because Joey had done his solo album with this label called Sanctuary Music. And it was a good friend of mine. Kevin Patrick got him the deal on this label for his solo album, Sanctuary. And then Sanctuary happened to have a publishing house. So my friend said, well, look, why don't you come down and we'll talk to the head of Sanctuary Publishing and let's do a book. I said, okay. I didn't seek it, you know. I mean, I had it in the back of my mind, but it kind of fell into place on its own. I was very fortunate on that.
Yeah, sometimes those are the best deals.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't have to pay a book agent. That was great.
yeah, book agents can be problematic.
Well, you know, like, you know, it's like a band. You know, people think they make a lot of money, but the manager takes 10%. Then you have the booking agent taking a percentage, and you know, the record company takes a percentage. Unless you're a big band making a lot of money, a lot of groups don't make that much money because a lot of people taking pieces out.
And unless you're somebody like the Stones, where it doesn't matter how much they take out.
Yeah, exactly.
Well.
But the good thing, you know, the Internet's kind of changed things on that matter. People, you know, bands now can put together, with the technology the way it is now, you can record a great album in your basement, in your own house, in your bedroom, because the technology is, like, superior now. You stick it up on the Internet, avoiding the record companies, you know, it's amazing how that has taken over. It's kind of, that's changed the face of music. You know, record companies are doing very badly these days. The internet's killing them, you know?
Well, I've had a number of performers, you know, that I've run into as a result of events like the BEA, who, some of them, you know, have kind of picked up with the new wave of, you know, internet publishing in the music business, and others are fighting it tooth and nail, and I suspect they're going to lose.
No, no, you really got to go along with that. It's really amazing how that's changed. Actually, in the publishing business, the internet, you can publish your own book now on the internet. There's people, a place called Lulu and other people.
There's a bunch of places.
You don't even need to just write the book. You put it up in PDF files. You send it to them, and they have it. And then whoever wants to buy the book, they print up book by book. So
yes.
It's amazing, amazing. A lot of my friends, a couple of my friends have done that. You know, they want to put out a book, you know. And it's not really, you know, the old days, you had to have an agent to go to the book publishers and blah, 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 blah. Now you just, you write the book, you put it up, you got it up online, and then, you know, it's up to you to advertise and get it out there for people to buy it. But the book can be out there if it becomes popular. They print up as many as you want and sell it to them, you know. So the internet's really changed. It's amazing. It's an amazing thing.
It's still to be seen whether it was a good change or a bad change. For most people, it seems to be working out okay, but for those who are in the business, so to speak.
Well, I hear the internet in the background tinkling away there. What are you doing?
I'm looking at about 6 screens as I do the show.
I hear that Windows sound that's very well known.
Yeah. That's the computer saying, you screwed up, you can't do that, dummy.
See? The internet's affecting everybody. It really, really is. I think it's for the best of the internet. The best.
Well, I guess, you know, the Ramones, of course, have gone by the wayside, but it was definitely an interesting group. And while I run into people quite often who are really, you know, grew up, you know, from my same generation who remember them well. I'm finding as I get older, more and more people, when you say Ramones, go, who? So that.
That's funny because I find more and more people say, oh, Ramones, yeah, I know them. It's amazing how many people know. It's incredible. I bump into people and I say, I work with Ramones. They say, Ramones, you got to be kidding. Wow, you know? And people I would never even think of knew the group, but they get a lot of you get lumped together with the Beatles, Rolling Stones, Ramones. They kind of get lumped together. Their name kind of gets slurred in there. You know, it's great.
I remember this is West Texas, so
we played a lot of Texas. We did a lot of shows in Texas, all over the place. We played El Paso, we played San Antonio, Houston, Dallas, Lubbock, all over the place. We played all over Texas. Good crowds there.
Maybe I'm just running into a group of people who never really got out much.
Okay.
But definitely it's been an interesting trip down memory lane talking with you about the group. And we have done almost our full hour.
Wow, that was fast, huh?
Time passes quick when you're having fun.
That's it. That's what they say.
Well, I wish we could have gotten it up and talked about it live from the BEA, but I think the studio...
That's much better. It's much quieter. It's a little noisy there.
Yeah, it was definitely that. Well, I appreciate you being with me. The book is On the Road with the Ramones. You can find it where? Amazon?
Everywhere. Amazon.com. Bookstores can get it for you. Barnes & Noble's. Don't get it for you if it's not there. It's all over the place. You know, if it's not there, just they'll order it for you. Amazon.com is a good place to get it. I like Amazon.
Yep,
it's actually on Kindle. It's up on Kindle, too, if you have your Kindle. Talk about the, you know, technology.
Yeah, they're just moving my books into Kindle.
Yeah.
Now
with the iPad coming along, well, actually, iPad has a Kindle application, so you can, if you have an iPad, you can get the Kindle on the iPad. So, There you go. Technology moves on.
Yeah. Hopefully, they're not going to do away with books for good. It's still something about walking down the street with a book in your hand.
Yeah, it's nice to have that, you're flipping through the pages and things like that, you know.
Yeah. Well, I do want to thank you for being with me. My guest is Monty Melnick, who was the tour manager for the Ramones for 22 years. And we will, I'm sure that when you write your next book, if you'll let me know, we'll get you on and we'll talk about that.
Okay, I'll let you know if I do. Thanks a lot. It's been lots of fun.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, that was Monty Melnick. The book, though it's not what I normally deal with, the book is absolutely fascinating. Now, I see we've got a lot of folks in a chat room who are discussing all kinds of different things. I appreciate you all joining me. Gray Artist says a good interview. I do appreciate that. I like to get away from time to time from the paranormal and what have you and talk about things that interest me from, in all my years, this is the first man I've come in contact with who actually had association with the Ramones. And while they're not a word-of-mouth band today, in their era, in this country, they were quite big. They could have been as big as the Beatles. All right, well, what we're going to do right now is we are going to get the one and only Yoli, as soon as my phone system decides it's... Huh? It's curious as to... All right, there we go. All right. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
You ready to do a show tonight?
Yes.
Okay. You're on the air.
Hello, beautiful people.
Well, I've met a few more, and you need to reserve judgment on a few of them. Now, we have Gray Artist said hello, and Laura 200 is here.
Oh, great.
And we've got a guest. We got the lone ghostman. We've had a bunch of people in and out of the chat room tonight. Since you're so much younger than I am, do you remember a band called the Ramones?
Yes, I do.
I just interviewed their tour manager. He wrote a book about the fun and excitement of being on the road with the Ramones.
I wasn't too much into that band, but I remember their songs, and I was more a country music kind of person.
Ah, well, we were discussing, getting my singing career going. You know, I don't believe any possible career, overlooked.
Just don't go on to American Idol. Oh, no, go on to American Idol. Simon Cowell is gone.
yeah, but I bet he'll be back.
I'm sure he will.
Now, another of your predictions came to pass, a second volcano in Iceland.
It's still going to be another one that's going to erupt.
How about earthquakes?
Seems to have tapered off. looks like it's going to hit in the Asian countries, but it looks like it tapered off for a while until the tornadoes pick up again. Now that I'm seeing tornadoes and hurricanes right now. We have 2-3 hurricanes heading towards the United States.
How's the... there was one tropical storm, Alex, I think.
Yes.
That caused some rain as I was coming back, but it seemed to taper off.
This storm is going to be like Andrew. This hurricane's going to be almost like Andrew.
Hmm.
A lot of flooding.
It looks like we've been hacked again. And I want to warn people that this fall, the internet radio falls under the Patriot Act, and those who like to do this silliness can find themselves facing criminal charges. And if you expect me to say, "Oh, forget it, it's just kids," I don't do that. If you're big enough to stand up and do something like this, you're big enough to face whatever comes. As one young man found out to his dismay when he lost his scholarship.
And it's easy to get the culprits, just like I was able to do it. Anybody can do it.
And the, you know, what these folks also don't understand is a lot of our listeners are members of the local FBI. So quite often they're sitting there watching when morons do this stupidity. Now, I was made an offer of a contract at this at the BEA. Do you foresee it being successful?
Yes, I do. Because I do see you shaking hands with the person who you make the contract with.
Okay, then I can retire to the beach and sit in the sun for the next 70 or 80 years?
Not yet.
Oh. Well, it doesn't hurt to try. Okay, let's, for those who would like a reading, you can either call in. The local number is 915-219-4210. Toll free from any place in the continental United States, 866-229-2155 or 347-857-2680. Any of those numbers will get you on the Ken Hudnall Show. Now, just out of curiosity, I had my meeting on syndication. What do you foresee about that?
I'm hearing you saying you're going worldwide.
Well, that's always good. We've got some truly idiotic people in the chat room right now. I just sent out a text over to a friend of mine at the FBI. He should be signing in any moment. And let him take it from there, because, you know, this is a interference with a form of communication. So you see me saying I'm going worldwide.
You're going strong with this radio. it is going to hit big.
Now,
we have a lot of listeners. That I do hear.
Well, that's nice to know. You know, I'm trying to bring guests that give a different. I don't want it to be the same thing every night. Now, what do you foresee in the economy over the next, let's say, 6 months?
This year, it's not too bad, but it is going to get, well, partial, not too bad. And it, for a lot of people, it's going to get real bad before the end of the year. That's when they're going to take a big hit. They're already taking a big hit. Like saying it's not the end of the oil spill. A lot of beaches are going to be affected by this because that's gushing beyond. People have no clue how bad it is underneath the water.
Well, that's true. I was listening to Carvel talking on, he is down in, what? Well, we've got a couple of folks that really think they're cute, trying to rest interfere with the show. We'll see what they think when they have to be answering questions. Carvel used to be a big advisor of Clinton, and he lives down in New Orleans. And he was being interviewed about the oil spill, and it's a whole lot worse than they let us understand.
No, this is worse. It's worse than the Valdez. Way worse. Businesses are going to shut down, like I said before this started getting any worse. It's going to break a lot of people. Resorts are going to go under.
Well, now, we've never firmly established, was it an accident or was it sabotage?
Accidental. It was accidental.
So the explosion that was heard was just an accident?
Yes, it was an accident.
It wasn't Al-Qaeda?
No, I didn't see any of that. It was he knew he had made a mistake, and it cost everybody. But you know what's so funny? Is this lady that was on board that platform advised, well, she took matters into her own hands and started calling Mayday. And her boss comes up and nobody told you to say that. Why would he say that?
Because he was trying to cover up what was going on.
Well, that's risking everybody's life if she hadn't done that.
It's called CYA. And that is the first thing that a corporate executive does.
Yeah, and he reprimanded her, but she didn't care. She kept on.
Well, some folks just
thought she made everybody jump the rig. And it's a good thing she made everybody jump the rig because that man was not going to do it. So she saved a lot of people's lives.
But she'll probably lose her job for being insubordinate.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. He was the one who was insubordinate.
Well, he was covering the corporation.
Oh, I know, but he would have killed all those people. And they survived. Well, some did die because of the explosion, but a lot of them survived due to her. But unfortunately, it's a mess. And it's going to get bigger. And if the hurricane hits, can you imagine all that oil landing on shore, beyond shore?
Yeah. Well, now, just out of curiosity, do you see another Katrina-type hurricane hitting New Orleans?
I see the hurricane, but I can't pinpoint exactly where it's going to hit. But what they pinpoint a lot is around Florida, just a little bit above Florida.
Okie dokie.
That's where it looks like the most, but I haven't captured where exactly.
All right. Okay. Now, if it hit southern Florida, you know, a lot of that land is just barely above sea level. That's going to be a major mess.
Very big mess.
And if the oil spill gets that far, as they're talking about it doing, if there is a hurricane, everybody could slide off.
More than slide off.
Yeah.
It's going to be awful. Looks like one's going to hit Mexico and the other one just a little bit above Florida or at Florida.
All right, we have a caller. We will bring him on. You're on the Ken Hudnall Show. Hello? Well, he went away.
Shy.
His name was Larry.
His name was what?
Larry.
But he's not shy. Larry's not shy. He's very talkative.
Well, he hung up. All right. Let's look at a slightly different topic here. How do you see the, there's been a lot of political unrest. Do you see that calming down any?
I haven't seen any calming down of any political unrest since Abraham Lincoln.
Well,
it's always going to be that way. Every president is a blunt of somebody. That's unfortunate. No, not too soon.
Not too soon, huh?
No.
Well, I'm kind of curious. Is there going to be, in your opinion, come November, a backlash against the Democrats?
Not a big major backlash.
Not a major backlash?
Not a big major backlash, no.
What do you say about Sarah Palin being president in 2012?
No.
You don't think she can be president?
No.
I've read her book. She thinks she can be best president we've ever had.
Yeah, she could try and be president, but I don't see her being elected. Because some of the people's fears would be she let the governor of Alaska, Sunley, without finishing her term. What is she to do if she were president? Leave it?
We got some people in El Paso that have been elected to positions and leave them for something else. And they keep getting put back into different positions.
She is a good speaker, and she is very motivated, and she did do a lot of good things for Alaska.
And she made moose hunting very popular.
What a beautiful sport of death, but no.
Well, if you're going to nitpick, gee. I mean, if we get invaded by mooses, she's right here to pick up the pieces.
I only see it if you hunt for food, fine. But if it's for sport, that doesn't cut it.
Okay, we have another caller. Let me see if I can bring up my switchboard. Well, you're on the Ken Hudnall Show.
Yes, my name is Trevor, and I'm from Delaware.
Well, how are you?
I'm doing good.
I was just in Delaware.
Excuse me?
I was just in Delaware.
Oh, really, really? How was the weather?
Well, it was misting rain most of the time I was there. Okay, you want to get a reading from Yoli?
Yes, I want to get a reading from Yoli and ask her if she knows how to make a...
Don't say it. Heidi, would you drop him, please? All right. Unfortunately, we have...
I knew that gentleman before. He was your caller from the very beginning of your show because I recognized his face.
I don't know why they seem to think it is fun to act like utter asses. You would think they'd want to grow up.
Well, he's a skinny runt, so... Well, not so skinny, but...
Well... All right. We have... an IP address to turn over to my friends down the street. We'll let them... deal with it. Now, moving right along, like a herd of turtles, since people want to play games instead of getting readings, then, you know, basically...
I noticed then that at the beginning he started being very cautious. Like,
I noticed that. Yeah. And since he said he was in Delaware,
that's what he was starting to do.
Since he was from Delaware and he asked me how the weather was there, I thought that was kind of interesting.
That's your other clue, that he was not from Delaware.
Yeah. Or at least not in Delaware. I would think after a while they would find it tiring to look like such asses. But, you know, maybe that's their... permanent state.
That's why he was lying from the very beginning about his name, about everything.
Well, we will just continue on, and if we have any serious people who want readings, then I suggest you pick up the phone and call 915-219-4210. Toll free for any place in the continental United States, 866-229-2155 or 347-857-2680. And any of those numbers will get you on the Ken Hudnall Show. Now, we had, while we were in New York, met a lot of unique personalities, I guess you could say. And a lot of them are going to be on the show over the next few weeks. Okay, Chaska says for me to ask about the water they're digging for. How close, if they're heading in the correct direction, any info will be great.
Heading towards the correct direction, you're about just a couple of feet from the site. That's what I'm hearing, just a couple of feet from the site.
Okay, we have...
It's going to manifest to him in a dream.
Is that before or after he finds the tomb?
Good question.
We have Larry, who is calling again. Let me see if I can... You're on the Ken Hudnall Show.
Hey, Ken, how's it going?
Pretty good. What's going on?
Nothing. I was just calling in to see if I could possibly get a reading.
All right. Yoli, this is Larry.
Hi, Larry.
Hello, how are you?
Where are you from?
I'm actually from Midland, Texas.
What I do notice about you, you always have this smile on your face, but you lower your eyes. You tend to have this shy kind of look on your eyes, even though you're not shy. Do you understand this?
Yeah, that actually makes a lot of sense because I'm usually not too shy about calling people up and telling them to make me sandwiches and fat nigger.
When are you going to grow up, by the way?
Heidi, drop him, please. Cell phone information. Cell phone information to go to...
A 30-year-old man or 30-40-year-old man. And in a state of being a 5-year-old. That's sad.
Yeah, it is. I just sent his data.
Oh, yes, an IQ of 30.
Well, I'd be surprised if it's that high.
I find it funny because they have to reduce themselves to that level. They're just a joke.
I don't know what amusements they get out of it.
They just think it's funny. Oh, by the way, they're going to put another one already.
Who did?
They are.
Oh, are they?
Yeah.
Well, all right.
They've been teasing you a lot, haven't they, Ken?
I know. They enjoy harassing a disabled veteran. Which shows not only are they morons, they're un-American. So we will deal with that situation.
Well, it's a pity for them. No intelligence whatsoever. They just know what they really are. That's all.
And for people to think racial slurs are fun.
That guy had a little bit darker hair than the first one. And he's taller than the first one. But they're both morons, you know.
Now, the, you know, after a while, the, when there's no immediate punishment, they think they got away with it. They don't understand that the feds watch until they build a case big enough that they can make sure they're not wasting their time. And then when they get hit, it's like, well, it was just good fun. Yeah, sure, it's good fun. And yet, none of them have the nerve to meet me face to face and do this crap.
And it's funny he said a racist slur when, in fact, his ancestry, way back in his ancestry, he has black in his ancestry. And that's what's so funny that he says that.
Well, it...
And his partner's looking at him right now.
Well, my point would be, if you are a man, come face me, but you won't. Because, like another one here in town, you're a coward. If you weren't, you'd be on the phone right now telling me you're not a coward. But instead, you're going to hide and laugh and think about how you got away with something. You got away with nothing.
They're the ones who abuse women, the ones who think they're mightier than thou, and they will not confront men.
Well, all right. We have, let's see what we got. Okay, we got a bunch of callers, but I'm not going to
not from that place.
Take the calls at the moment.
Somebody else doing it now.
Apparently, according to Chaska, there's a large crew of these morons from some Wagner show, and they like to disrupt other shows on BTR. They don't seem to realize they can actually go.
It looks like three or four people so far that I see there.
And they always just get so beside themselves. It's always just good, clean fun. And unfortunately, the feds don't think it's fun. Since 9/11, they have a very dim attitude of all this crap. All right. And guys, there are a lot of people who like to listen to the show. And they don't want to deal with complete and utter asses like you guys. And prove you're a man. Come call me out. The one with the El Paso cell phone number. Come call me out. Come meet me face to face. Prove you're a man. But of course you won't because you're a coward. And until you can prove you're a man, your calls will not be accepted on this show or any other show. These kids don't care. Oh, I think they care.
No, they're not older gentlemen. They're not children.
Nope.
They're not they're young people. Not. They're older.
Yeah, these are not kids. These are well up there. And this is how they prove their worth. Now, getting back to the, well, I'll tell you, here's a question for you. Now, I think Yoli has proven her credentials. I think Yoli has proven that she is, a rather accurate psychic. Let me ask you this, Yoli. Are these sorry excuses for humanity going to get caught and have to and be punished for what they're doing?
Yes, eventually they will.
And that's when we'll see them cry.
I know.
That's when we see them cry like little girls. Now, if we have some people in the chat room who would like to ask questions and get a reading that way, since it's pretty much been ruined by these...
They're laughing about it.
Say again?
They're laughing right now.
Fine. Let them laugh.
The one that laughs last
is the one that laughs best. But what it proves, and while they may not say it to each other openly, refusing to answer my challenge shows they are cowards. When all their friends nigger and, you know, laugh up their sleeves and all this other stuff, then the point in time comes when somebody throw it back up in your face that you are a coward. Okay. Now, what other readings for the future do you have, since the morons have pretty much ruined people calling in? Okay. Well, the what we're looking at. You need to speak up, Yoli. Your voice is fading in and out, according to Jessica.
I was trying to pinpoint the vehicle they have outside of their place. It's a light-colored vehicle. I can't make out if it's what color it is, but I'm trying to grab onto the light plate. Need to focus more on
Okay. Internationally, you know, right now North Korea is kind of thumbing its nose at the world.
Yeah.
Is that going to work? Say again?
It worked.
It's going to get worse?
Yes.
Is it going to erupt into a war?
Yeah. I hope they send those morons so they can come in.
Well, cowards like that run and hide, so.
Oh, I forgot they're not men.
What's your view of the oil spill in the Gulf?
Going to get worse, way worse. Louisiana. They're going to have to kiss their shrimp industry goodbye. Oysters or whatever they get from that area, they might as well forget it, scratch it. Fresh fish, it's going to be unknown on that both areas. A lot of marine life is going to die. But it is heading towards Florida. It's going to be heading up north.
Is it going to come up the Rio Grande?
Not the way the water is going. It looks more towards South Carolina, North Carolina, Virginia. Looks like it's going towards that direction.
Is it going to eventually get capped?
I'm hearing it is going to be a success. But they're going to have a hard time capping it.
We're already on day 46 or 7, I think.
That oil spill, the way they're doing it, it's enough to fill swimming pools of oil. That's a lot. The way they were saying, that's a lot.
Yeah.
And by the time they cap it, you're talking major disaster.
According to Chaska, the oil and chemicals are in the Gulf Stream heading north at 12 knots. Is offshore of South Carolina right now.
Oh, no. I was hoping you wouldn't get that far.
Well, as we came across the country, BP's got a lot of service stations in the southeast, and none of them had any customers.
Florida, they got a lot of cancellations for the beach. A lot of them, all the way down Florida, past those places. A lot of people are canceling. Businesses are hurting so bad.
Well, unfortunately,
some are going to recover. Some will not recover.
Yeah, every time something like this happens, a lot of companies, small, mom and pop companies, go under.
Yeah. Big businesses stay on.
Well, of course. And, BP is just going to cut its losses and go into something else. Now, let's go to something else. I was, in New Jersey and Delaware. Not this past week, but the week before. And the weather was really kicking up. And even in May, it was colder than usual, number one. And number two, there was quite a bit of debris coming in on the beach. I mean, there was nobody on the beach at all. But I was also told that there's not a single haunting in Atlantic City.
That's why I say people should stand together instead of fighting each other like this idiot, instead of fighting their minds and doing destruction. Why not put their minds in helping people and helping us? But it should get in and out instead of fighting and complaining about it.
Well, these folks think These folks think what they're doing is cute. They feel like big men by ruining everyone else's enjoyment of something. Okay, we've got another 20 minutes in your segment tonight. What other predictions for the future do you have about international events?
You know what's so nice, Kim?
What's that?
Not nice for everybody, but the draft that's going to be reinstated. These guys are going. They're going to take it.
Well, that's not enough.
And unfortunately for the others who are doing a living, who are doing something of themselves, that's the sad part. Who have families that care, that's the sad part.
Well, that's true. Astro Intuitive is not with us tonight. Wonder where he went. Okay.
People to get their things in order. It's time for people to stock up for emergencies just in case. Because the earth is turning into a mess. It's going to be a mess.
Is there going to be any shortage of diet, Dr. Pepper?
Heaven forbid you have a shortage of that.
Astro Intuitive has joined us. Oh, that's nice.
Welcome.
Came back. Now, when do you foresee the North Korea issue really coming to a head?
It's like they're debating about it in the UN. And before the end of the fall, looks like there's going to be a declaration of war. I don't know if they're going to try and stop it before it gets to that point, or it's like the peacemakers don't want the war. But what North Korea did was unjust.
Yeah.
And have people like that getting away with murder. There is going to be retaliation. And it looks soon.
Are we going to be in the middle of the war as usual?
Can you imagine war over there, war over here in Afghanistan, and in Israel, Somalia's a mess, Cambodia's a mess. That's why we're having so many things happening already. All those dead fish, the plagues, the multiple bed bugs, and now the frogs.
Yeah, but none of that ever comes to El Paso.
We get the flies.
Let's see. Okay, Chaska says there's interesting information on the net about the oil spill that's not on mainstream news. So you're saying by year's end we should be in a shooting war with North Korea?
I see ships heading towards that direction.
Okay. The
Marines, they're all heading towards that direction.
All right. What side is China going to come down on?
What, I'm sorry?
What side is China going to come down on?
Looks like they're going to be against us.
Well, that's not really good news.
Japan will be with us. Russia will be against us.
Okay.
Venezuela, Cuba will be against us. Italy and France will be with us.
Well, you can't really count France. They'll surrender if anybody looks at them.
Germany will be with us.
So we're going to have what amounts to World War III.
Yes.
All right, what's going to be the situation along the southern border?
They will have a civil war.
Which is going to drag us in, of course.
Well, not really. It's mostly among themselves. There'll be a little bit of spillovers, but not really. The spillovers will be near Santa Teresa coming up north.
Well, I was going to say, when they're shooting in the street out in front of my house, I'll call you.
I know one lady already moved out of Santa Teresa because she saw it way before I did. She moved her horses, everything. Sold the property.
Well, what's going to be the ultimate outcome of all this fighting?
A lot of death and destruction, a lot of hunger, a lot of poverty. A lot of sadness, fear, anxiety, a lot of depression, and a lot of faith. And that's what's going to overcome everything, faith.
Well, now in 2012,
people are going to turn to God more and more and more. Those who didn't will start. 2012 is a new beginning. It's like the earth trying to revive itself again, trying to get better again.
Now, Will nuclear weapons be used in this upcoming war?
Yes.
Well, that's not good.
It isn't. I know. It isn't. But North Korea fights dirty.
And you say it's going to be toward the fall?
More or less around that time. If not by the beginnings of next year. But it looks towards the fall like they're trying to start something already. If not sooner. The UN is trying to pacify the situation. They're trying to make peace.
Yeah, but the UN has always been worthless.
Yeah, unfortunately. They know what North Korea did was wrong. Even their diplomat knows that what they did was wrong.
Yeah, but he's trying to play politics.
Yeah.
Gray Artist is leaving. I'm sorry to see you go. You know, been gone a week, and this is my welcome back with everybody leaving. That doesn't say much for, and then of course, you know, the idiots have to show up. Okay, if
they have nothing better to do than make destructions everywhere they go.
If we're looking at war in the fall, is everybody going to bomb each other back into the Stone Age or just a little bit of damage?
Is anybody going to what, I'm sorry?
Are we going to bomb each other back into the Stone Age or is it just going to be a little bit of damage?
A little bit of damage.
Okay.
Not for us, but some cities will get hit.
In this country?
In this country. Hopefully not. But I do see our missiles intercepting those missiles.
What cities do you foresee?
Towards the south.
Parts of the south?
Looks like around Georgia, those areas.
Well, that certainly affects property values.
I bet I don't know if it's going to land. That I don't know.
Let's see. Astro Intuitive is not with us anymore. Chaska said maybe I can get some of the retired sandwich crew to go into the USMC. They wouldn't last 2 minutes in the Marines. They wouldn't last five in the Army. Because there's no need for children, which is what these clowns are. Okay, we have... Well, actually, we got just a few minutes left in this segment. Now, because of the the travels and what have you, I've had to kind of modify this week's schedule. Yoli is only with us for this hour. Then Monday, she'll be back at her regular time. But this week I'm trying to catch up with some I wasn't able to interview because of the problems with the Wi-Fi in New York City. So, anybody have any last questions that they can ask through the... Oh, Chaska has a very good idea. The sandwich idiots could be the bullet catchers on the rifle ranges. Yeah, they give you nets, and you stand down range and catch the bullets. We don't want to, you know, waste all the lead. So you catch them, and then you bring them back, and they're reloaded. And that is a skill that has use in civilian life, by the way. Well, I think that's part of the problem. Some of them love mankind a little too much.
Well, the majority of them come from dysfunctional families. So that's
very dysfunctional. Well, certain places I've been have different words for it. Well, we are finished with the segment, Yoli. I appreciate you being with me.
You're quite welcome, Ken. And I hope it's better instead of worse.
we'll see how things go tonight.
Maybe they'll grow up.
Well, we can only hope. I'll talk to you later.
Bye-bye, people.
Okay, that was Yoli, who's an internationally known psychic. And before I go to my next guest, I do want to remind you that this next hour will be brought to you by Marcello's Ristorante Italiano. Now, there are two of them in El Paso, one on Vitrovino, one on Mesa at Festival. Now, let me tell you, I personally have never been a great fan of Italian food, but the way they make it, I absolutely love it. You need to go in, you need to tell them you heard about it on the Ken Hudnall Show, and they will give you a dinner that will absolutely have you begging for more. Now, we're going to start talking about the specials that they offer. And I think you'll see that spending time at Marcello's Ristorante Italiano is definitely something you ought to be doing. Now, we have, what is this? I got all kinds of things ringing and making funny lights. Now, my next guest is Liat Silverman, and her specialty is tarot cards. Now, I had somebody ask me if I could get someone to talk about tarot cards, a little bit of the history, how accurate they are, you know, that type of information. And known in the
hello.
Liat Ken Hudnall.
Hi.
How are you?
Good, thank you. How are you?
Oh, I'm just having a fun time.
Excellent.
It's just been one thing after another in tonight's show.
Oh.
there's a group of people who think they are just the funniest people you'd ever want to meet, and they call in and they do stupid things that shows how funny they are.
Oh, no.
And, they are just some of the most ignorant people it's ever been my misfortune to come in contact with.
Right. And are they on your show now?
They've been in and out. It's gotten so bad I've had to quit taking phone calls, just to let you know.
Right. Oh, so you're not going to take phone calls again for tonight?
People are talking to me through the chat room.
Right.
So,
and that's a better system. You can police that better.
That's true. Okay, well, your specialty is tarot cards.
That's right, it is.
And I've had people over the, as I do various shows, somehow two topics always come up, Ouija boards and tarot cards.
Okay. Well, I can't help you with Ouija boards at all, but I can help you with tarot cards.
Okay, well, just for the edification of those listening, what exactly are tarot cards? I know we've all seen them, and we've all probably used them at one time or another, but what exactly are they?
Well, tarot cards are actually 78 cards. The playing cards we see today, they're derivatives of the original tarot cards. So the cards that most people play with, they originally came from tarot cards, and then they got rid of the fancy, more esoteric cards, and then they just kept the regular playing cards. And so the history is old. I think in the Middle Ages, in the early Middle Ages, they started coming around. There's 78 cards. There's two groups. The minor arcana are the 56 cards, sometimes called pips, which are the suits. You know, they're the four suits of 10, and then they've got the page, king, queen, page, knight, king, queen. And then you've got the major arcana cards, which are those 22 exotic cards, which start with the fool at zero and then build up to the world at 21. So that's in a technical thing, actually, what the cards look like. And I think that it's my personal belief that although many tarot cards today look mysterious or exotic, when they were first developed in the Middle Ages, most of the symbols or images in them would have been easily understood by everyone. So that most people would have looked at it and said, oh, no, I know what that means. But as the cards grew older, most of us today don't always understand the images, and that's why we go to tarot card readers to help explain, you know, as we pull them out, what does it mean for us.
Well, now, how does one become a tarot card reader?
Well, in my world, actually, it's very normal to become a tarot card reader. I think a lot of girls in high school or in college buy, you know, a pack of tarot cards and start experimenting. And there's so much initially that to take on that they kind of give up. But I was 16, and I used to play just gin rummy with my grandmother, and I shuffled like a card shark. You know, I had this affinity for the cards. And one of her friends said to me, you shuffle really well. You should read tarot, which is, of course, what every 16-year-old girl wants to hear.
Of course.
So I said, yeah, okay. And I went out and bought, I knew nothing, like nothing about tarot. And I went out and I bought entirely the wrong pack, which was indecipherable to me. Like it was so hard. And I looked at it and I played with it and it got nowhere very quickly. And then I thought, you know, but it held me, like it was interesting for me. And then I thought, no, I'll try another pack. And then I bought the Rider-Waite pack, which is the most common. You know, if you're ever going to buy a tarot book or if you're ever going to look at things, most people work off the Rider-Waite pack. Most of the new packs that people design off those original designs. So I bought that, and actually it began making sense to me. So I began, you know, just kind of playing with it a little bit, reading for myself, reading for others. I personally, and I think a lot of tarot card readers personally, find it very difficult to read for myself. So I can't read for me. I can read for people around me, and I can read for people I love, but I can't read for myself. And then in my early 20s, I just began to read for strangers. So I've been reading for a long time now.
Well, now there's a question from the chat room. Aren't tarot cards satanic?
No, not at all. I mean, I think tarot cards is about energy. I mean, I think that a lot of things that we don't understand are actually about what I call psychic energy, that people, you know, of any psychic phenomena, people who are clairvoyant, people who can kind of pick up what you're thinking or feeling at it too, who are really empathic, what they're doing is they're like radios, and they've tuned into your energy. And I think that tarot is, for me, is the medium through which I tune into your energy. And so there's no inherent good or evil in it at all. They're entirely neutral. And the way I use them, of course, is very good, because I, you know, wouldn't want to use anything in an evil way. But I don't think there's anything inherently evil in them at all.
Well, now, how did they come about?
I don't know precisely. I mean, I don't know actually the history of the tarot from the Middle Ages. I think that people who were traveling from town to town, which were traditionally gypsies in the Middle Ages, people were very landlocked and didn't travel around much. So the people who traveled from town to town wanted something to entertain people with. But I think some of the cards I've seen have been with Egyptian decals on them, and they're of a much older type. I mean, there's some people who used to read Egyptian cards, which for me, they're not traditional tarot cards. They're a different way. But the... people trying to divine the future, people looking in forms of divination, they've been around forever in different ways and forms. So tarot just evolved to be one of the forms of divination. Like people have been reading tea leaves since people have been drinking tea. You know, so for 5,000 years people have been drinking tea leaves. And I think that, you know, there's two ways of doing this. One is that it's a very fun and interesting and exciting way just to kind of think about what's going on in my life. And I think there are people who try to make very serious decisions in their lives based on the tarot. And as a tarot card reader, I wouldn't say to somebody, you know, you should get divorced, you shouldn't get divorced on the basis of what the cards say. You know, I wouldn't make shattering life decisions just on the basis of the cards. But I would use them to inform myself of where am I putting my energy and what's going on for me at the moment. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. It does. The thing I find fascinating about tarot cards is so many people in one form or another who are in the paranormal world either come back to, and most I've come in contact with, somehow come back to the tarot cards.
I think, you know, somebody said to me, and my sister often once said to me, she said, I think you're psychic and you just hide it behind the cards. And I said, actually, I'm not, really. I mean, because I can sit next to you in the subway, and I can see if you're upset or not upset. It's probably a bit more than the average person, but nothing specific. But if you sit in front of me and you shuffle these 78 cards, which are just bits of cardboard, really, and you plonk them all out in order, I will look at you and I will say something that is uncannily perceptive about your life, that there is no way I could have predicted that off the top of my head. I think the cards have a way of distilling your energy and putting it out there. And I'm really interested. You know, people pay and come to see me, and they expect me to be a tarot card reader. So they don't. But I'm really amazed at the magic that I see all the time. And I mean, magic is the wrong word, but at the outcomes that I see. You know, I was doing a tarot card reading for a woman I did not know at all in New York City, in Tribeca, and I just looked at her and I said, well, your marriage is very strong. And I thought, you know what a risk that is? Like, is she married? Is she happily married? There's many. But she nodded because she knows her marriage is strong, and she thought, yeah, of course. But that's what the cards told me. If I was sitting beside her in a subway, I had no idea about the strength of her marriage. So I'm constantly amazed at how accurate the readings are. People come to see me, expect accurate readings, so they're not actually as amazed as I am about what comes out because they're expecting to see it. But I know that I'm just a regular person. You know, I'm just a person walking down the street. I don't always know it, you know, things about. I mean, I'm quite perceptive. Somebody said to me, no, you read people really well. And I said, I'm quite perceptive, but the cards really give me information that I don't have by myself. And that's one of the reasons for me personally that I can't read tarot cards over the phone. I need you to physically be in front of me and to infuse your energy into the cards, and then I need to pull them out into the pattern that I always use, which I personally always use the Celtic cross. People have different, you know, like with any of these things, you build up a ritual, a history of ritual that you do all the time, which helps sort of, you know, present you with the information and how you deal with it. But I always do a Celtic cross, and then I come out and I say, you know, I do a cold reading where I say, I know nothing about you, and I'll just tell you what I feel, and then I say, now you give me a lot of feedback, and then we'll explore further on the basis of, you know, what I've said. You tell me where I'm right and where I'm wrong. People very rarely tell me I'm wrong. I mean, you know, of course, as with everything, you can go, like a school teacher, you can have a really excellent school teacher who just doesn't get on with your own kid, or you can have, you know, so it's not that I can absolutely read perfectly for everyone. Sometimes I'll just meet people and I think, it's not connecting, like I need to push it a bit harder. But for the vast majority of people, I connect really well, but I connect through the cards. I'm not, you know, it's not me. I really think the cards have something. And, of course, the way I read the cards, as opposed, you know, if we had four tarot card readers in a row looking at the same reading, would we get different interpretations? I've never done that. I'd kind of be interested to see that. If we had one person shuffle and pull out the cards and all four of us then thought what we thought those cards meant, it'd be interesting to see if we had different readings out of the same cards.
Well, the thing, where do you get the information that you give out?
I get them from the cards. So I get, you know, the cards talk about all sorts of things. There's one whole suit which talks about pentacles, which is money, which is work, which is if you're feeling grounded. There's one whole suit which is about cups, which is about emotions, which is about feelings, which is about marriages, which is about love affairs. There's one about the wands, so which is about your energy. The wands is where your energy, and it's about fire, and it's about how you're interacting with your life. So I get those cards, and if all your wands cards are kind of stuck and glitched, and I go, well, you know, you've got a lot of energy, but it's all tied up wrong. It's not coming out the way you want it. In actual fact, your energy, the more energized you become, the more stifled you feel, which is what I actually said to a woman this afternoon at a reading, and she goes, yeah, you're right. I said, you've got to, you feed on energy, and it's really important to you. And what you're doing right now, you know, she had the Ten of Wands, which is an image of a man kind of carrying this whole stave of wands in front of him. And I said, this is a bad card for you because you're the Queen of Wands. You need to let this energy flow. And because you've stopped it and tapped it up, you're not getting where you want in life. But I wouldn't have said that to her without those cards. I mean, I wouldn't have known to say that to her. But those cards came out, and they were the cards we discussed with, you know, together.
Well, I guess my question is, does a particular card always have a particular meaning, or are you psychically gaining information by the use of the cards?
Both. I think that the particular card has a static meaning, but where it falls and what cards are next to it and what the juxtaposition of the cards are affect the meaning. So it's like, I don't know, it's like blue is always a color, but if you put a different color next to it, if you put enough pink next to it, you begin to get a shade of purple. So that even though it's you look at it and go, well, that's a blue, then you look at the shadings of it as well. And I think that's why you go to a tarot card reader instead of just kind of playing around with yourself with the cards, because you want somebody else to kind of look at and see the shadows of meanings and what could possibly fall in and what does it mean that this card is particularly next to another card. And I've been reading cards for a long, long time. I still get combinations I haven't seen before. So then I stop and I say to and the other thing I get, ironically and weirdly, I get combinations that I see all the time, which is statistically very unlikely. You know what I mean? Like, people are shuffling cards randomly. You shouldn't get the same cards just kind of falling next to each other. But I do. I get the kind of what I consider pattern cards. And you go, yeah, these three cards often fall next to each other and blah, 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 this is what it means. And then the other day I got cards that I hadn't seen next to each other ever. And I said, just give me a moment so I can look at these cards together and kind of suss out what it's trying to tell me. And of course, the person did. And, we started exploring. But it's endlessly interesting in that way. I mean, it's 78 pieces of cardboard, but it's a whole story each time.
When I first started doing my show years ago in California,
mm-hmm.
I said on the air that, I was always interested in interviewing psychics and tarot card readers and this and that and the other. And I must have met everybody who ever thought about holding a deck of tarot cards, and I always required someone who's appearing on my show to read me first.
Right.
And I got some of the most bizarre readings that you could imagine.
This is an involved story. Give me a minute to tell it, please. But one of my friends who's a wedding photographer said to me that he believes that most people's abilities in life, a lawyer, a teacher, or whatever, they fall into a bell-shaped curve. Like, I would say that 50% of everybody in any profession is pretty good enough. Let's say 20% of them are very good, 20% of them are pretty bad, and then the other 5% are excellent or terrible. And that's just of lawyers, of doctors, of everyone. You kind of expect everyone to be excellent at their jobs. Many people are not. But in tarot, it's different, unfortunately. I think in the psychic world, it appeals to charlatans. And I would say that even though there are still 5% of the people who are really excellent at what they do and highly ethical and well worth going to, I do think that there is a far greater percentage of people who are actually out and out just making it up. you know, that it's there's no feeling or ethics or anything behind it, and that's disappointing for me as somebody who's really trying to be a true practitioner. And I think that people who go to these sorts of, I always say, if somebody starts talking to you about curses, just walk away, because at the very least, what they're trying to do is just rip you off of money. But at the worst, they're really going to put bad energy into your life, and you don't want it. So if you meet somebody and they do a tarot card reading for, I don't know, $35, and then they go, but I've seen this terrible curse, and now you have to buy this special candle to get rid of the curse, and now I'll give you a blessing to da-da-da-da, and I go, no, that's really just bad. You know, they're not giving you a professional reading, they're not giving you anything that's real, they're just trying to rip you off, walk away quickly. And sadly, that's just true. I don't know if that's been your experience, but I've certainly met psychics, you know, because I'm interested, and when there's somebody around, I kind of go for a reading, and sometimes they're excellent and really perceptive and terrific, and quite often they're just not.
Well, yeah, you're right. I've run into some psychics who, with a road map and a flashlight, couldn't have found their rear end.
Yeah, I know.
I've run into other psychics who, after giving me a long song and dance, that they don't have any special gift, yada, 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 will sit there and tell me what I had for breakfast.
And you know, I've done it too, which is annoying for me, because I will give you that whole yada, yada, yada story of, you know, I'm just a person, it's only the cards. And then I did a reading for this girl, and I don't know, I said to her, it was her, that she was projecting really clearly, and I was just picking up on it, which I actually believe is true. I think that some people are really closed and don't give a lot of energy out, and some people are really open and just pushing all that information out. But, you know, I was talking to her, and I suddenly said, you know, I don't know why, but I just keep seeing the word Montana. And she goes, my boyfriend's from Montana, and he wanted me to go there. And I thought, you know how often I introduce just casually the word Montana into a conversation? Not very. You know, like it's not the normal thing I would have said. And I kind of looked at her, and I thought, ooh, that's a bit kind of strange. It's not normally what I say. But, you know, and then I said two other things to her, which were just kind of uncannily accurate. And I thought, she's going to expect this reading from everybody. I don't give it to everybody, and I was only giving it to her. You know, I don't always do what you do for breakfast. But I do tell you, you know, if your cards are telling me clearly about your relationship, that's what I report that I see. You know, I don't make up stuff, or sometimes people want me to say things like, you know, well, where is the guy I want to meet? Is he around? And I'm going, I don't see him. Doesn't mean you're not going to meet him. It just means that I don't see him. But I don't make him up just because you want me to talk about him. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's one of the things of being a reader is I have to believe what I'm saying when I speak to you about it.
There's a question in the chat room. Can you pull the lotto numbers from the cards?
Oh, no, I know. Wouldn't that be terrific? No. And I, you know, somebody explained it to me once in a way that kind of made sense to me. They said that sometimes if we're talking about energy, if you want something really badly, you can kind of pull it into your life. But the problem with the lotto cards is that everyone's doing that. So it's not like if you're just kind of going, I really need a car park, I really need a car park, you know, there better be a car park for me. And then miraculously as you drive up, there's the car spot. And you thought, yes, I made it happen. Why can't I make the, you know, the lottery cards happen, the lottery numbers happen? And the answer is that everyone's pulling. You know, everyone's wishing just as strong, and you're kind of canceling each other out.
So you need to tell everybody else to shut up.
That's right. If no one else wanted it, maybe you'd have a better shot. Exactly.
All right. When you start doing tarot card readings, how do you, I mean, there are those that treat it as a hobby from which they make money, and there are those that treat it as a business. How do you get it started as a business, I guess, is my question.
I think that you start, in a way, you start it as a hobby and then you build it into a business. What, in the beginning, I was very active in my local community. So a lot of people knew me at my local school. I was a PTA president. I was kind of, you know, around. And I began telling them, people I knew, saying, I'm willing to read tarot cards for you and for people that you know. So I networked through my community. But after a while, your community can't feed you, you know, regularly on that level. And then I began advertising, and the first person I saw from City Searches, which is where I mainly advertise, I was more nervous than, I mean, they didn't know that they were the first person I was seeing through them. I was kind of nervous. I thought, well, who are they, and what are they going to be like, and what's it going to happen? And then it turned out just fine. But I do think that you need, you know, I set up a blog for myself so that people could find me. I write in that blog regularly. It's tribecatarotreader.blogspot.com. So I update it weekly, and I talk about the cards. I talk a little bit about readings that I've done. And that also begins to feed some energy into it. And I treat it like I'm a professional. You know, I treat it with respect. And I don't kind of say, you know, today I'm not going to do any readings because I'm tired or cranky. I go, you know, I've made a commitment and I've got to be there. I treat it like work.
Mm-hmm.
But it takes time. It does take time. And people have different ideas of how to do it. I personally don't have a set space. I read in a coffee shop. So that's that, you know, which is makes my overheads much less. But some people... But I, you know, I'm not available 24/7. You've got to book me in advance. You just can't walk in off the street and find me. You have to call me and make an appointment. And then usually, quite often, you know, in the next 2 days, you can see me. But you can't see me within 10. You can't just walk by and say, I want to, on impulse, and have a reading with me.
Well, one of the strange things I discovered about California is a lot of people are... psychics and tarot card readings for corporations. They actually sit on the boards of these corporations, and their job is to read, either do a psychic reading or a tarot card reading. What's the next quarter going to bring?
Wow.
Right.
Well, you know, economists only get it right 20% of the time. So they've only got to get it right 20% of the time, and they're up there with the professionals.
That's quite true.
You know, I mean, so it's interesting. There was a program on television. I'm sorry, I've forgotten its name, but it was like this competition between various kinds of psychics, and you were going to be crowned the best psychic in America.
Did you see it? Actually, I've had the winner on the show.
Ah, you see, I loved it. I mean, obviously I loved it. It's just the sort of thing I'm so interested in. But I was watching it, and one of the test questions, one of the things they gave us, they said, we're going to take you to a hotel room where somebody famous was killed. What can you tell us? So they take us to this hotel room, and we see the person walking around, and one woman, it was interesting when you saw what somebody did it, like, badly, and you thought, my God, they know nothing. And I said to my husband, I wouldn't be able to do that at all. Like, that's not my skill set on any level. Could I help you there? But one of the women said, I see the letter J, and I hear the word Annie, and it was Janis Joplin. And I was going, oh, my God. And Adam, my husband, said, well, that's not enough. Why didn't you say Janis? And I was going, really? You know, like the expectation of what constitutes knowledge?
Yeah.
Like, I was going, my God, she got J and Annie. That's pretty damn close to Janis for me. And he's going, no, 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 it's not clear enough. So I think if I was on a board, I think it'd be difficult to decide which is actually the clear enough answer. Like, you know, somebody might say J and Annie, and then, you know, buy or sell. How do you translate that?
Well, that's a good point. In my the many that I've dealt with, the most accurate tarot card reader I ever met,
mm-hmm.
and she was phenomenal. Was a Penthouse Playmate.
All right.
And her mother, who could have been a playmate herself, was just as accurate, though the mother would come close, but this girl would hit it right on the nose. Just absolutely unbelievable.
I'm not surprised, actually, that it's a mother-daughter thing, because I actually think it has a genetic component. I do. I do think that for a long time, what we did was that anybody who had any of these kind of skills, we encouraged them not to have children. It was like the woman, the wise witch woman, kind of on the corner of the village, but not part of the community. And mm-hmm. if she showed any of these kind of psychic skills, the community shunned her in a way, and it was less likely that she would have children. Not impossible, but less likely. So we were kind of breeding it out in a strange way. But I do think that they'll find, and I also think it's stronger in women, generally speaking, that there's more women psychics or more women tarot card readers around. And I think it might be something that it's on the you know, the DNA works, comes through women more easily. I just think there's so much science that we can do about psychic phenomena that we have done none of, you know, that we haven't done anything. And this is what I want to say. I had a funny interaction with an acquaintance the other day, because he's a journalist and he knows me as a community activist. And I told him just in passing that in my professional life I was a tarot card reader. And he said to me, "Really? And you come across as so intelligent." And I laughed and I said, "I'm intelligent." I know. I said, "I'm intelligent when I give readings as well." But he got me thinking, and I wrote this post in one of my blogs about it, about my prediction for psychic phenomena. And the way I compared it was that I said, let's think about blood for a minute. People always saw blood and had theories about blood, but it was really much later than you would think. It was in 1919 that they discovered about blood groups. They had the rudimentary tools for blood transfusion in the 1700s, so they could take blood from one person and put it into another, but they didn't know what they were doing. When they first had the technology, they thought, logically, that you take transfusions from strong people and put them in the weak or the sick people, or even from strong animals and you put them into the sick people. And, you know, that kind of makes sense. We can eat animal food. Why wouldn't we be able to take in animal blood? But unsurprisingly, most people died after this transfusion. But what was even more mysterious for the doctors at the time was that not everyone died. And then they had to kind of think, well, why didn't you die when other people were dying? And they couldn't figure out what was going on. And it was only when they discovered the microscopes, which could actually see the blood cells sufficiently, that they understood that, you know, blood type O can go to everyone, but other types of bloods don't mix well together and will actually make you sicker. So this is my prediction is for, you know, in 3010, whatever, whenever we manage to get to this level of science about psychic phenomena, is that we strong and solid science for psychic phenomena. They will have a reasonable explanation as to sometimes why studies worked and why they didn't. And it may be that we have like four types of people who give off different signals, and some people block each other and some people are universal acceptors and some people will never be able to be read. I'm not predicting, but I'm just saying that I think that they'll actually figure it out. But I think it's real. I don't think it's some sort of figment of somebody's imagination. I think that it's a real and true thing that people can observe. But there's something about when you put it in the science lab, it becomes much harder to observe. And that's what interests me about, you know, maybe the people who are in the science labs are all kind of, you know, blood type AB or psychic type AB, and they're blocking the psychic type O's. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah. I know someone can block themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Until I was 14, I could tell you how much change you had in your pocket if you asked me and I gave you an immediate answer. But right. People acted so strangely, and of course at that age you want to fit in.
Right.
And I just quit doing it. And now, only under stress can I do it.
Right. And there's the other thing that if I, you know, when you look at the art world today, everyone who's drawing is standing on the shoulders of giants. You know, they're looking at Michelangelo and they're looking at Leonardo da Vinci, and they're using those people's genius and progressing. But in psychic terms, everyone's reinventing the wheel each time. We don't have, like, popular geniuses to stand on and say, this is how I did it, learn my technique, and then improve on it.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone seems to be, who has a little bit of skill, doesn't quite understand always how it works or doesn't think about it analytically. They just can practice it. And so we're not teaching each other how to become better practitioners of psychic phenomena.
Well, that's an interesting point. You know, a number of the psychics I had on my show in California,
mm-hmm.
I mean, their career paths covered the gamut.
Yeah.
One of them, who was an excellent psychic, was on my show every Monday night, I think. Her father became ill, and she had to take over as president of his company and didn't want the stigma of being a psychic to cause problems within the company.
Yeah.
So, and another one was the longest-serving director at a major company's board. It was just mind-blowing what major companies based out of California used psychics to decide what the company was going to do during the next quarter.
And did it help? Were they run well? Was the company succeeding?
Routinely, they seemed to do better than average.
Well, so that's interesting. I mean, you know, if you find somebody who can work and that you trust them, I mean, it's a lot of trust. You need to really trust this person, and you need to feel proven about them.
That's right.
You know, it's not a simple thing to do. I mean, there are stories of the police who ask psychics to come and help them. And I understand how difficult it would be for the police because, you know, they're all about gathering evidence, and this person is getting evidence out of the air. There's no tangible reason why they say what they do. But if they're right and if they help you find, you know, a kidnapped child or something terrible, then you know, by all means use them. But the other thing is that people are so vulnerable at that moment, you don't want them to be exploited. So, it's hard on both levels. So you want the best possible options, but you don't want somebody who will just kind of exploit a grieving family and you know, just say stuff till something happens.
And then there are those that walk in and can tell you exactly where the missing child is, right down to
what
the clothes are.
I know. I mean, I find that dazzling. I mean, I'm, you know, exciting and important and real and, you know, all those good words. And I do think that it will become more. I really do. I just think we're on the cusp, actually. We're like, you know, when people say, often in the present we don't know what's important. You know, in 100 years' time they'll go, well, this was very important, but the whole world was worried about X, but really it was Y that was very important.
Exactly.
I think one of the things that's going to be very important is that our new way that we're going to evolve is not about, you know, who's stronger or who can hit the line better. One of the ways we're going to evolve is in who's more psychic. That we're going to let that happen now, which we didn't let for a while.
Yeah, but frankly, there are certain people who should never be allowed to be psychic.
Yes, yes. But, you know, there are certain people who should never allow to be parents either. I mean, you know, we can't control for that, though.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, it's like, so, I fully understand what you mean. So I always say, in the country of the blind, the one-eyed man is king. And that's a very important story for psychics. You know, if you have an ability and you can, I don't know, confuse people or see things that other people can't, we really hope that you're a moral and good person, that, you know, that you're not going to exploit the situation. And many, many won't, but some may. You know.
I think some will.
Yeah. I think some will too. And I think some have. You know, just when you meet people who are really charismatic and are really charming and you can kind of feel their will kind of pushing you along, that's a form of something. You know, that's a form of energy transfer. That's a form of them kind of making you feel that it's exciting to be in their presence.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, that's an energy transfer where you're giving them your energy and, you know, and making them stronger and somehow making yourself a bit weaker. I mean, people do that with fame all the time. It's one of those interesting things I find, you know, when people say, you know, he's a famous person, I'm so excited to see them and I'll do anything for them and, you know, they're the more powerful, interesting person than me. You're giving them your energy and, you know, are they acting responsibly with it? Are they treating you well for it? Sometimes yes, sometimes no.
Well, I'm always, you know, when I do a book signing, you know, basically, I'm signing a book.
Mm-hmm.
But I've had people just get totally beside themselves. They heard me on the radio. Now they're I'm signing a book, and they just get so excited, and I'm going, why?
Yeah. Well, I was reading how in, what's his name, Justin Bieber, the really cute boy who doesn't speak to me at all, showing you how old I am now. But you know, he was in New Zealand, and these fans got so excited that they kind of knocked over his mother and were threatening to trample her. And he's going, it's not cool, guys, for you to knock over my mother. And I'm going, yeah, they get so excited, and they give away their energy, and they're not even thinking carefully and cleanly about what they're doing.
Yeah, you're right.
And so when I talk about tarot cards, really I talk so much about energy. You know, that to me the tarot is a snapshot of where you are putting your energy in your life right now, and that it's not reading the future in a way, because I say nothing is set in stone. What we're seeing here is where you're putting your energy, and if you continue to put your energy in this way, this will be the outcome. But if you don't like the outcome, we can discuss how you shift your energy and put your energy elsewhere. You can have a different outcome because you've read the cards. You would have had this outcome if you weren't aware of what was going on, but because now you're aware, you can change your outcome. And that's why actually you should go to tarot card reading, not so much to get some sort of clear snapshot of the future, but to see the potential future and to see if you want it. And if you don't want it, then you can act, which is actually terrific, because otherwise you could just stumble into situations that you don't want at all.
Mm-hmm.
I did a tarot card reading for a woman the other day, and she was very concerned about her PhD and graduating and what's going to happen, and, you know, will her thesis be accepted? And so we talked for an hour very intensely about you know, her life and her career and what's going on. And at the very end, I said, you know, this one card, I just don't understand it. It's a card of a child. And she goes, oh, I have a son. And I said, you have a son? And I thought, we've been talking for an hour about your life, and you haven't mentioned your son. And I said, are you single? And she goes, no, I'm married. And without thinking, without even, the first word out of my mouth was, well, you need to put more energy into your marriage. And she laughed because everyone tells me that. And I said, yeah. Like, if you could do a whole tarot card reading and talk with somebody for an hour about all your goals and aspirations and what you want for the next 6 months, and your child and your husband are not even mentioned in passing.
You got a problem.
You got a problem. Like, you know. And so that's what I said to her, and she laughed, but she said, oh, everyone tells me that, you know, I'm not giving enough energy to my husband. And I thought, yeah, you're laughing, honey, but I'm serious.
It could, you know, something like that could be, you know, a major problem.
Well, what I wanted her to say was that this is a snapshot that's really important. I've taken a snapshot of your life, and you haven't included your family in it. And that's a problem. And you need, you know, if you can look at that and actually acknowledge that that's what you've done, then you can fix it. But if you just kind of begin saying, well, no, that's fine, I'm not really worried about it, then they're pretty sure that husband's not going to be part of your life much more, you know, in a way. And I don't have to be, it's not actually a psychic prediction. It's like a common sense prediction.
Yep, you're absolutely right.
And so that's kind of what I said to her, but that wasn't what she was expecting from her. And that was, of course, in the last 5 minutes. You know, we were the hour's up by then. That was in the last 5 minutes, and I kind of thought, you know, what I actually do, which is kind of original as a tarot card reader, is that I take your email if you want to give it to me, and I send you a JPEG of the image of the card that spoke to you the most. So, and I try to make it the positive card that spoke to you the most. And then I say to people, you know, print it out and put it by your computer so you've got that image to remind you about, you know, where you wanted to put your energy and what you wanted to change. And that sometimes if something momentous happens in the reading, some readings are more momentous than others, I will write a little paragraph about, you know, what we discovered in the reading or what happened. Not a lot, you know, a couple of lines. But I wrote to her afterwards saying, you know, here's the image of the card that you wanted. And really, I would just encourage you to put more energy into your marriage and into awareness about what's going on with your husband and child, because, you know, if you don't, they'll starve of the energy, and then your marriage will really be in trouble. So that's the kind of thing that I do for people after a reading.
Oh, well, that's good.
Yeah, I like it because I find that, I mean, I'm always, you know, people say, can I tape it? And I said, absolutely, you can, you know, people got very fancy phones right now. And when I started tarot reading so many years ago, I actually had a tape recorder beside me and I would put a cassette in, and people would bring a cassette and I would, you know, tape it. But no one even has cassette players anymore now, so I don't think it would be helpful. But people have some very fancy phones, and I say to them, look, if you want to record me on your phone, go ahead. It's a lot of information. And sometimes it's hard to take it on, you know. Sometimes you kind of, what did she say? How did she say it? What did it mean? So I send people this kind of little summary of, you know, what we said. And also, I write down all the cards that you pulled so that when you come to me again, I'll see if the same cards come up, and we'll talk about that. So we have a, you know, your second reading is actually slightly deeper than your first, because your first reading is completely cold, and I don't know you, and I don't know your history. But in your second reading, I'll say, oh, my gosh, you've got the Queen of Wands in exactly the same space. You know, so I'll be able to say that, because I will have written down where the Queen of Wands fell last time.
Hmm.
No.
Some psychic fairs where the there's always a tarot card reader or two there.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
And almost every one of them has arrangements set up for a recording of the session.
Mm-hmm.
And the individual gets to leave with it. I guess they feel they got something.
Well, I say to people, you know, I'm really happy for you to record this, but if you listen to it again, I'll eat my hat. You know? I don't think anybody actually ever listens to it again.
Well, you can't tell.
Well, no, I can't tell. You're right, and I'm always encouraging people to do it, but I don't know actually how many people do it. Though I have to say, in my own life, I have had recordings, and you know, like 3 years later, you kind of find this dusty cassette tape sitting at the bottom of a box, and you pull it out and you play it, and you kind of see. So what happened? You know, how much it was came through, and how much didn't?
I had a reading done by mail.
All right.
Years ago. And I came across it the other day.
Mm-hmm.
And it amazes me how accurate this woman was who had never laid eyes on me.
I'm very impressed when people can do that. That's not my skill set, but I'm very impressed when people can do that. You know, there's a lot of... somebody was offering, you know, readings on the internet, and I thought, look, let's see what she does. Let's see what happens. So I gave her some money, and I had the reading, and it wasn't... It felt so generic. It didn't feel like she got it at all. And I thought it's a really hard skill. You know, some people have it really well and clear, and some people won't. You kind of got to be prepared to kind of, it's a small risk every reading that you have. In any, you know, in any psychic risk reading that you have is a small risk, not a big one, but a small one, to kind of see if that person will be able to read you accurately or not.
Well, I've got every day I probably have three or four folks offering me readings.
Sure.
Who have, you know, heard about the show, and they never say they want to be on, but they want to give me a reading.
Well, it's a way to meet you, and if you're impressed, you put them on your show, so that would be a good thing for them.
And some of the readings are quite odd.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's just, even, you know, I know where I'm coming from and what a good person I'm trying to be with this. And even I have better readings than others for people, you know. So it's still, or better days or better, you know, and you can't predict and you can't know. But, you know, some people I meet and they're really open and it's easy for me, but it might not be easy for the next psychic they read. And some people I find kind of, I did one reading for a girl, and she kept her sunglasses on the whole time. And I thought, you know, honey, it's going to be really hard to get anything from you if you keep your sunglasses. I didn't say it to her because she clearly, you know, didn't want to take them off. So, because I said to her, you know, you can take off your coat. And she's going, no, I'm fine. And I thought, well, that's a very, you know, just at the very simple level, you're showing that you're very guarded, and it's going to be hard to get anything, you know, special and unique out of this reading.
There's a question from the chat room. Aren't readings just a place and time for the person and for truth? Can't that person change their life?
Yeah, absolutely. Without question. Absolutely. It is just a snapshot of that moment. And you can change your life totally. But what it gives you, why it's useful, is that you look at the snapshot and you kind of say, right, so I'm putting all my energy here. Do I want all my energy in that space? Or, you know, I'm really, there's a card called the Four of Pentacles where this man is sitting on a throne and he's got coins at his feet and he's holding it to his heart and he's got a coin on his head. And that's when you're really worried and focused and concerned about money. And I go, you know, if you operate through fear like that, it becomes very difficult to take any risk, you know, like any reasonable risk. You kind of lock yourself into jobs you don't like or into relationships you don't like or into spaces that don't work for you because you're so fearful. And if you kind of look at that card and you go, oh, my gosh, is that what I'm doing to myself? I don't want to be there. You can change. Having seen the card, you can say, no, I don't want that. And then change, and your whole life will be different, you know, if you can allow yourself to move from the job that you didn't like and think, no, there will be other jobs out there for me, or, you know, to move from the relationship. I read it for a girl, and she was staying in a not even a marriage, she was a boyfriend, and she was scared to leave him because he was financially stable. And I said, that's a really hard space to be, you know, that you kind of lock yourself in with this guy only for the money. Like, if you don't like him, and if you met someone you love, but you're staying with him because of the money, that's a really difficult space for you and for him to be. And she said, no, you're right. I look at this image and I don't want it. But she wasn't aware of it until she came to the reading. That's what the reading gave her, that kind of the awareness to look at the snapshot and say, oh, is that what I'm doing?
So basically, it's another way to basically read your personality.
To read your intentions. Your personality and your intentions. You know your personality, so you don't actually need, I mean, sometimes you don't, but most people know quite a bit about the personality, but they don't always know where their intentions are pushing them. They may think they're doing one thing and then do something else, and that's where the cards help.
Can anyone, in your opinion, learn to be a tarot card reader?
You know, I think it's like, can anyone learn to be an artist? And the answer is everyone can learn to draw. But can anyone turn into a real artist and make a living out of it? No. You have to have some sort of talent. But you won't know if you've got a talent if you've never tried. You know, I can't draw at all. Like, I can't. I get all my perfectionism comes out, and I hate everything I've ever drawn, and I don't like it. But the cards contain me very nicely, and I can see a lot, and I feel that I actually have some real talent there. And I think that some people just look at it and go, well, it's bewildering, or it's too much, or I'm not interested, or whatever. And I go, that's fine. Not everybody has to do it. But if you really want to do it, if you're really curious about it, that might be an indication that you have some talent. You know what I mean? That it's drawing you. But it's still a learning curve, and you have to let yourself learn, and you have to let yourself make mistakes. That's just the way people learn. So you'll look at a card and you go, well, I think it means this, and then you figure out afterwards, you know, 3 weeks later, you go, oh my gosh, I was totally wrong. Now I can see what it really means. So that's why you have to read for friends and family first, so that you can kind of feed back to them.
Well, that makes sense.
You know. But you get better. I mean, or not. Or you figure out. It's very interesting. I'll tell you one thing. I kind of thought to myself, I wonder if I could be a palmist. I'm just kind of interested in palms and whatever. And I went to a woman who I didn't feel she was, like, extraordinarily smart or really charming or really anything. But she said such perceptive things about me from reading my palm. I thought, there's real knowledge here. There's real skill here. But she couldn't teach me anything. I couldn't, like, the more she said to me, the more confused I got and the worse I became. And I said, all right, so I can't read palms. I mean, like, which is fine. Most people can't. But I did explore it. Like, I thought, you know, I can read tarot cards. Maybe I can read palms. But I couldn't. Not at all. They didn't speak to me at all. So, you know, if you start reading the cards and it just doesn't make any sense to you or it's confusing and annoying you, don't do it.
Well, of course, if you have the ability to read the cards, that can give you quite a bit in the way of advantage over others. As you say, it's kind of like being able to read personalities. I do that from time to time.
Yes. Yes. But I'm trained as a therapist, as a psychotherapist, and I worked in England in the hospital system. And there were times I was really wishing I could say to people, can I read your cards? like we could get to this so much quicker. If I could just read your cards, but I couldn't because, you know, like your friend who'd become the company director and didn't want to say she has any psychic to kind of tarnish it. I didn't mention that at all so that, you know, I would appear very professional and very kind of clean cut, and I didn't want to muddy the waters. But I really felt that there was stuff I would have learned quicker if I could have just read people's cards.
Well, maybe that should be made a part of...
An option. People,
yeah.
I mean, people go to, you know, to psychic healers and to you know, people, and this is where I caution you, like, be careful who you find if you've decided to go to, like, a clairvoyant kind of therapist. Make sure that they're really kind of the right sort of person for you, and make sure that they're ethical, which is kind of hard to prove, you know, blindly, but because you can make yourself emotionally vulnerable to people who are not necessarily have your best interests at heart.
No, that's true. Question from the chat room. Can you read for yourself, or must you get a reading from another tarot card reader?
I really can't read for myself, and I know a lot of tarot card readers who can't. There's something about, it's like, it's too close. And I always get the most terrible, terrible cards. I get the Tower, and I get the Ten of Swords, and I go, oh, my God, was I feeling this terrible? Like, I just get awful cards all the time when I do my own cards. But interestingly, I have a 12-year-old son, and when, you know, I'm talking about tarot and da-da-da all the time, and he said to me, you know, will you read my tarot cards? And I thought, oh, could I? Would I? Should I? You know, like, should I? And then I thought, okay. And he didn't understand, in his little 12-year-old wisdom, that tarot is actually talking about your feelings and what's going on in your life. And then for an hour, we had a conversation about his feelings and what's going on in his life. And I have to tell you, it was a wonderful thing for a mother to hear.
I can imagine.
And he actually liked it. I mean, and we actually had a really in-depth conversation that I'd not been able to get in any other way to him. About, you know, stuff that boys just don't want to talk about.
Now, is there a tarot card reader customer privilege where you don't have to testify about what came out in the cards?
Well, I won't tell anyone, but if you tell me you murdered somebody, I will tell someone. But if you tell me that you're... marriage is in trouble and your, you know, life is hard, I won't tell anyone else. So, and I never, you know, I'm very discreet. I've read for people I know, you know, for friends. Not even, friends is easier in a way, for acquaintances. Acquaintances is harder because you kind of know them a little bit, and then all of a sudden you know intimate facts about them that you wouldn't know in any other way. And I never discuss that with anyone because I feel that that would be a complete violation of your privacy, you know. And you know, I read these tarot cards and every so often I want a bit more publicity so that more people will come to me. And one of the journalists said to me, you know, will you let me sit on a tarot card reading? And I said, oh, that's really hard. Like, I don't know what's going to come up. So I don't, you know, I go to some of my regulars and I said, one of them I was thinking, should I ask her, should I not ask her? And then that tarot card reading was when she told me that her husband had cancer. And I said, I don't want a journalist sitting in on this. This is a terrible conversation, you know. So I don't let anyone sit in on it. I only let the person, you know, sit there and kind of... So if you want to bring your mother or your friend or your somebody you choose to come observe, that's fine. But I won't bring anybody else to observe.
Another question from the chat room. Does belief on the part of the person you're doing the reading for play any part?
You know, that's an interesting question because when we talked about energy, I think it does play a part. I think if you're sitting there with your arms crossed and going, prove it to me, that it won't be a successful reading. So, it's, you know, because you're blocking me with every erg of your energy. So, but you don't have to be concretely kind of, you know, totally going, I believe everything she says. You just kind of have to be open to the possibility that it's true. I had a very nice tarot card reading with a woman on Saturday. And it turns out she's a scientist. She's a PhD and I thought that's a really interesting mix. That she's a scientist who studies and has works as a scientist, and then comes to a tarot card reader. It makes her an interesting woman in my view, because it's so her work life and this going to tarot reading is so very different.
Hmm.
So, I think most of the people come to you. Have, you know, I haven't dragged people off the street and insisted to read for them. They've chosen to come to me. So that on just the fact that they've chosen to come to me usually is significant that they're open to having a reading. But some people feel very vulnerable and they feel, you know, defensive. And then it's a harder reading.
Well, that's interesting. You know, some of the people who have read for me, if I'd have given them a book, they couldn't have known any more. And
right.
Others, if I'd have sat there and told it to them, they couldn't have got it right.
Yeah.
That was just so far off.
And did they know that they were off, or did they just assume that they were on and you didn't correct them?
Well, I saw no need to correct them because basically I was trying to find out if they had the skill or the ability.
Right.
And there comes a time when you've got to say, Astrointuitive is leaving. I appreciate you being with me.
Hmm.
There comes a time when you have to say, well, then, you know, there's no point going down this path anymore.
Sure, absolutely. And that's when some of your listeners are saying, you know, could I be a psychic, could I be a tarot card reader? And the answer is, if you're kind of just doing it to be exciting or to, you know, have attention at a party or something, I don't think it's going to work for you because there's a lot of thought and learning and energy involved. But if you're kind of interested because it's always drawn you and you're always fascinated by it and you kind of find yourself reading books about it and thinking about it and you know, visiting lots of tarot card readers and having opinions about it, then I think you should explore it a little, but always with the idea of that, you know, not everyone who can draw becomes an artist and not everyone who can read tarot cards becomes a professional tarot card reader. And it's not an insult to anyone to say, you know, you can read the cards, but you shouldn't do it professionally. It's, you know, there's a lot of energy and intention about it. And some people, you know, don't like kind of what I love is that I don't know what any day will bring. Speaking as a psychic, I don't know if my day is going to be, you know, full of readings or no readings. You know, I get a phone call and, you know, quite a few people book within a week, but they don't always book, I don't know what's happening next week. And I like that. I like that aspect of it. I never know who I'm going to meet. You know, you ring up and we have a 3-minute phone conversation and we arrange a time. And then I tell you one thing. I'm totally not a phone psychic because I think, you know, half the time I'm thinking, you know, I'm meeting this sort of person. I meet a totally different kind of person. And I'm thinking, oh, you're not what I expected from the phone call. So my assumptions from the phone don't work well at all.
Well, back when I used to practice before I retired, there'd be days when there'd be just continual action.
Yeah.
And you get to the point where, God, I wish this would end. And then it does, and you sit there going, I am so bored.
I know. And that's how I feel. Like some weeks I'm so busy, like I'm running pillar to post the whole time. I'm kind of going, you know, when's a minute for me? And then when I get the minutes for me, I go, well, what happened here? Like, you know, where is everybody?
That's right.
So, you know, and I think anybody with a small business, you know, that's not about being a psychic. That's just somebody running a small business, a service industry, you know. That's just what happens. You know, you don't always know what's going to happen from day to day.
Well, it's always interesting to I never really looked at being a psychic as running a small business, but you're absolutely correct.
Well, I use the word practice, which kind of amuses everyone.
My goodness, we have run almost totally out of time for the show.
I got involved
and I have to play theme music and do all kinds of stuff.
Well, I will let you go and I will speak to you next week as well.
Sounds good.
Thank you very much for having me.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, that was Liette Silberman, who is a tarot card reader. Well, it's been an interesting evening. But tomorrow night at 6, this is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show saying have a truly great evening. Well, it would appear that my Oh, I see. We've been hacked again. You know, you'd think they'd get tired of it after a while. Here we go.